Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
Of Leaving in the Ring, my boxing fans' official radio show. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, our man, David Chen. A lot of news happening. A kill buzz. Honestly, a kill buzz right now. You know, I don't know if you guys caught up with this. If you're a hardcore boxing head like myself and the rest of us that get on this panel here, you already know. First thing that we woke up and the first news that we hear, Robert the Ghost Guerrero has pulled out of his scheduled match for the August 27th in San Jose HP Pavilion against Marcos Madonna, having a left shoulder injury due to a sparring session. They're postponing it. They haven't really given us any really more details than that there. So as soon as we get a little bit more details, I already called the Ghost camp, tried to get a hold of Madonna camp. Trust me, I was trying everything that I can today to speak to them, but everybody seemed to have turned off their phones because of this happening. And, you know, the funny thing is Amir Khan had put on his Twitter saying that Madonna must have paid off Robert the Ghost Guerrero step-aside money so that they couldn't fight each other. And Madonna right away, you know, calling him out, saying, oh, you finally stepped out of your cave. Hey, I'll fight you. He's calling Amir Khan rather than Khan. I'm just calling him Amir Khan. Hey, Dave Chen, if you can, check out the board. I want to make sure that my man Montoya is on the line with us. Anyways, so that's a big talk right now, man. A real huge disappointment. You know, I was actually working on the video for the Guerrero camp to post out there because Robert the Ghost Guerrero was with us a few weeks back. You know, talking to us about this upcoming fight, you know, and if you know this, Leaving the Ring were the first ones to announce that that fight was happening, even though they hadn't both signed on the dotted line that they were going to meet up with each other on August 27th in San Jose. So I'm up, you know, editing, putting up the music. Do you know the way to San Jose? Shit, I do, but now for what? You know what I mean, Gabriel?
Yeah. You know, actually, I have a theory of my own. Similar to what Amir Khan said, but I think that Madonna paid Guerrero step-aside money so that Ellie Sheckback wouldn't do any videos about this fight. Just a theory. Just throwing it out there. Not quite sure. How depressing is this? You know, I think fight fans, you know, they're throwing their fists in the sky and saying, you know, the sky is falling. You know, first Morris goes low and Mora goes crazy, and now we lose this fight. You know, I'm pretty upset about it, you know, but I think they'll put it back together. I think they'll maybe postpone it. It all kind of depends on the MRI, what's actually wrong with Robert's shoulder. If it's a torn rotator cuff, well, that's that, you know. That fight's going to be off for indefinitely because that's an injury that's very serious. It's going to take a long time to heal. If it isn't, it's just a sprain, you know, we're probably looking at, you know, I don't know, a couple months of rehab and then back to work.
Well, see, this is the thing.
It all comes down to that MRI.
Exactly. You know, and the thing is, too, is that we really don't know the extent of it because it did happen yesterday. So, you know, people jumping off the handle right now about Guerrero. I mean, I've already had a few people saying that, you know, this is not the first time he pulls out. He's only pulled out of one other fight, and it was by good reason. You know, his wife was going,
seriously,
you know, through a major operation, and you're going to dump on the guy for making that particular decision. Now, he has an injury. This is one of the biggest fights of his career facing Madonna. You know, and you want to go in as a fighter like this, especially in front of your hometown when you've been crucified for, you know, having an eye split open and then telling the doctor the truth, saying, I can't see. And, you know, having a bad showing in front of his hometown, you know, and now he's making a crucial decision because it's only a week away. He's like, look, I already went through this. I'm not going to do it again. My shoulder shot. Okay, let's pull out of it, you know. Does it suck for us? Yeah. Has it given us a bad week of what's been happening in the boxing world? Of course. Russell Mora, man, was just guys that really set the tone. It comes in threes. I wonder what the next big thing that's going to happen. Is Victor Ortiz pulling out? How about Floyd Mayweather? Is he getting locked up before the fight happens? I don't know. I hope not, man. I hope we just kind of shake off this run of bad luck that we've had that just started off on Saturday night with Joseph Beckel and, Adner Morris. What a terrible night, first off. What a terrible night for fight fans. We were robbed of a great fight. Some folks felt that Morrow was being fair, which I was like, whoa, you guys need to get some new eye prescription glasses, because I wear some pretty thick-ass glasses, Gabe. And I got to tell you, even without glasses, those were some serious low blows.
Yeah, I mean, what can you say? I mean, they were low, you know? And you know, I had a really good seat. I was front row center. I did have some photographers in my way. It's a really tall guy. But other than that, you know, I could see pretty much everything was going on. There was definitely some low blow action happening very early on, and Morrow was warning him. I didn't feel like Abner brought that in as part of his game plan. He's a body puncher, and to me, you know, we don't really see that a lot anymore. I think people are confused when they look at him and go, "Well, you know, somebody's actually throwing to the body." You know, they go low. It happens, and Beckel early on at least was doing the pulling his head down thing, which. You end up looking straight down the canvas, letting your hands go, and the trajectory changes. I get that. To me, everybody really flipped out on Abner Morris, the fighter. Look, it's his job. Fighters fight, refs ref. And we get really annoyed at fighters that look to the ref for some help or who whine to them.
Right.
Still crucify Kermit Cintron about arguing with the ref when he thought he was headbutt. You know, he later did an interview with me and said, you know what? I looked at the tape. I clearly wasn't headbutt, but I got hit so hard I thought nothing but a headbutt could hurt that much. People still crucify him for that, for arguing with the ref to continue. Fight fans need to make up their mind what it is that they want. I find it interesting, and I made a joke about it today. You know, the fight fans last week, it was an Abner Morris love fest. It's been that way for a while, since Beckel pulled out. Everybody's on Abner's nuts on Twitter, Facebook, mainly on Twitter, which is what I monitor. Now, it's like, you know, he's like that girlfriend you've gotten, and you're trying to talk to him after that first big that you've had. It's all awkward. People don't know how to respond to him. There's some people talking a lot of trash to him. You know, fighters fight, refs ref. And in this case, Abner fought, and the ref, well, he kind of refed, I guess. He more screwed up. He more effed up than refed up, you know.
Yeah, refed up is the exact term for that. Because, and you know, another thing too here, Gabe, is that what kind of surprises me is that you have a few folks saying like, well, you know, he's the ref, you know, you got to understand it's his job and you're not going to catch everything. But this is not the first time. I mean, you know, if this is the first time it happened, I'm one of those guys that are going to give him the benefit of the doubt. But if you remember when he refereed Guerrero versus Casitas, he did a very terrible job in that fight as well. Mora has history of either not calling things to when they should be called or jumping the gun. Russell Mora, to me, is a guy that should not be near a ring or a gym that is just catered to boxing. This guy, you know, I was very, you know, I was very cruel Saturday night. I called him a moron, and I'm still standing by that. I think the guy's an idiot. You know, I couldn't believe what I saw. Now, I picked Adner Morris, and you're right. The way some fans have really kind of clinged on to him and, you know, been rooting for him is fantastic. You know, I mean, Twitter and Facebook has shown that it's a vehicle of bringing new fans. But when you start believing you have a certain connection with these fighters, I understand that. But at the end of the day, take off the glasses, man. You gotta be fair. You gotta look at it and say this is not fair for Arbeco. This is not fair for any fighter to have a guy by the name of Russell Mora and then being supported by some blind fans that are just rooting and saying that they're justifying it just because they have some type of connection, personal connection with a fighter. That is not right. That is just far from being correct in our sport, and it's something that we have complained about. And you know what? The correction comes with us first. I don't know.
I think, you know, with Mora, too, you know, the only thing he's been consistent about is how inconsistent he is. You know, he's the guy, and I actually don't begrudge him this, when people trash him. But, you know, the Montiel fight where he, sorry, Dave, I'm making my way through downtown L.A. Back to my house, so a little trafficy out.
Right.
Enjoying this L.A. sun. Should be indoors shortly where it's nice and quiet. But, you know, Montiel got dropped and his legs shook and everybody went, oh, my God, how could you let that fight go on? But, you know, Mora was looking over to the fighter to put him in his neutral corner, which, you know, according to the rules, you're not supposed to take off, take his eyes off the fallen fighter. That's just pure protocol.
Right.
Speaking to a high-level official who has worked as a ref for 20, 30 years, he told me that when he taught people, that was the protocol. You look at the fighter. Mora blew it on that one, looked away, missed the leg shake, let the fight go on, and the guy took two unnecessary punches. It can happen. I'll give you that one. It can happen. But then you got the Guerrero-Castillo fight where, you know, he's doing, taking a bad low blow call right when Castillo is making a run. He's got Guerrero hurt to the body, and he takes a point instead or stops the action, and you lose momentum. But also, then he gets it right with Peterson and Rios with all the low blows in that fight. It's like, which is it? And to me, you know, I went home and I watched the tape of the fight, and you and I were on the phone when I saw this. At the beginning of the fight, it's kind of the ref's discretion based on the belly button. The belly button, anything below that should be a low blow generally, as far as I understand it.
Right.
In the bird's eye view, as they're coming into the final instructions, Russell Mora puts his hand over the right by the belly button at the top of the belt of Agbeko and says, anything below this is illegal. Anything below this is a low blow, I believe is the exact quote. And then the rest of the fight, he lets Mora live on the belt line. And and then he even lets him scrape below it. And people go crazy about that 11th round knockdown as well they should. But the 10th round, there was even a bigger, there was, you know, just as bad of a low blow. And it wasn't deflected. It was very clear. Agbeko was affected by it. And Mora basically let that one go, and he later said, you know, that was the time to take a point, and I didn't. To me, one of his biggest crimes is that inconsistency. Two is, you know, not paying attention to the rules that he set at the beginning of the fight. And three, just flat out, in my opinion, altering the course of the fight. You know, there was a very close fight point-wise going into those last few rounds, and because he didn't take points, and because he called a knockdown, he caused Agbeko a draw at worst and possibly a win. He affected the way the 12th round was fought. If Morris thought it was a closer fight, didn't have that knockdown, he might have been more aggressive in that 12th round, giving Agbeko chances to come on strong like he was. Maybe get a knockdown of his own, maybe get a stoppage.
There could have been three different scenarios of what could have happened in that fight if there was a point adduction, if there was awareness of Morris knowing that he's going below the belt. He could have, you know, he could have automatically had to readjust his game plan. You know, there were so many things. The thing, too, I want to take note is immediately, and let me put this out there, okay? I thought Morris won. Don't get it twisted. I thought he won. But I did take quick notice within the first 30 seconds of the first round, Morris throws a shot to Arbeko's hip. And I don't know if you guys didn't catch that. He threw a few shots at his hip. And Arbeko never complained about it. Fight fans, if you want to call in, you want to get in this conversation right now, you sure can. 347-215-7598. And going back again, we're talking Morris versus Arbeko. We're talking about Russell Moron calls of not catching on to low blows that repeatedly happen throughout the fight. And a little later, we're having Glenn the Road Warrior Johnson on the show to talk about his fight that's been contracted in November with Lucian Butte. And then a little later, we're going to have Alfredo El Perro Angulo talking about his newly signed contract with Golden Boy. So we have tons of things here to talk about. Yeah.
We have two others. Al Bernstein's going to join us at the very last minute on the show. He's watching Glee right now with his son. We'll just leave that comment until he comes on. But also, Joseph Agbeko contacted me and said he'd love to come on at 7 o'clock. So look for him as well. Yeah.
So Joseph Abeka cool will be on. Great, great.
Yes,
that's fantastic news, man. I mean, because I like to hear his take. I want to hear what he has to say about that. I know he was very distraught. He was disappointed, you know, and it's going to be great just to hear his part. Because, you know, I tell you what, when he came on, Gabriel, which was last week to talk about this fight, this is the way he sounded, you know, when he talked to us.
Mentally, you know, very much, you know, I wanted to be a champion for a very long time. So after losing to him, I realized he has cut my...
But now... After getting those repeated low blows, I heard he sounds like this now.
It's harder to keep it because everybody wants that belt. Everybody is after you. Everybody needs to your...
So it is a change, man, of getting repeated low blows to the nuts. It can change your voice. It can change your personality. And it can change a whole lot of things. Anyways, I'm having fun with this because at the end of the day, you got to have some fun with it. But let's pass in some fight fans, man. I want to talk about this.
It's hard to keep it because everybody wants that belt.
All right, man, let's patch in some fight fans. Enough fun here. Let's patch in Rob. He wants to talk out of Beko and Modest. What's up, brother? What's on your mind? You're on right now, Leaving the Ring.
Hey, how's it going, fellas? Man,
great.
Yeah, it's just a shame that that happened. But I like you said, I think Modest won, and it was a good fight. You know, I know I also be quick because I know y'all got a great show coming on today. Yeah, I don't think he was doing it on purpose. I keep watching over and over. I think what he was doing, he was trying to get under that sweeping left hook because every time he throw a combination on 1-2, 1-2-3, Beko would try to come in over top, and then he was trying to counter to the body. And you could see he's kind of bending down, and sometimes his head was getting pulled down at the same time he's getting under that sweeping left hook. And but it was a good fight, and I think he won it. It just sucks that you know, this kind of overshadowed it, you know what I mean? But I still thought it was a good fight other than that. But I guess it's fair for the rematch.
Yeah, I definitely don't think that it was he was intending to do something like that. You know what I mean? I think that what it is that his punches are looping. And they're not very accurate, you know what I mean? I mentioned that in the first, last week, saying that he really fights off of aggression and youth, you know? And but I got to tell you this here, Rob. In my opinion, I did see a lot of improvement that were very subtle, you know? The one thing that I noticed that he knew that Adebeko likes to trap you. We talked about that, you know? He likes to walk himself to the ropes, and he'll trap you, make you make a commitment. He'll slip a punch, and then he'll counter you. You know, Morris, in those first couple of telling rounds that they were when they were facing each other, he didn't fall for that trap. He didn't bait himself in. What he was doing, he was darting in and out. And that really, I think, set the pace of confusion for Adebeko, you know, in a lot of ways. So, yeah, definitely, I don't think he did those low blows intentionally at all.
Yeah, I just feel bad. I kind of feel bad for him. He can't catch a break because I think, you know, he won a close decision when he should have won the belt the first time. Against Johnny Perez now this, you know, this is kind of just I know a lot of people are angry over it, whatever, but it was still a good fight. But I think he did good, and the rematch, you know, he got the belt, and now he has to go through this again. But I was a fun fight. I just hope, you know, he kind of keeps him higher, you know, and you know, watches his body shots. But it was a good fight.
The thing for me was that, you know, I think it was the fifth round. I was sitting next to Ramiro Gonzalez from Golden Boy. I was in a kind of a makeshift press row. And so I wasn't surrounded by riders. I was surrounded by, like, fight people. And mainly I was camp. And by the fifth round, we both looked at each other, and I said, you know, I don't care who wins this fight. I want to see it again. You know, it was just
exactly
that good of a fight. You know, and to me it was not – that comment wasn't based off the controversy at all. It was just – this was being fought at a very high level. Two very skilled fighters fighting with a lot of intensity, you know, just a lot of urgency. Each round was very tough. I thought Morris was winning, and I thought he won the fight. But you know, there was a lot of ebb and flow. I thought Morris tired around, you know, round eight. And then Beko started to make a nice run. And I'd already given him a couple rounds early. So it was just a hell of a fight. And that's what really bums me out is one, we really overshadowed how good of a fight it was. Two, Morris wins his title, and the guy certainly not enjoying it.
He exactly.
hasn't had his victory lap, you know. Everybody's talking about Russell. I love Steve Kim's nickname for him, Russell Nomura. You know, everybody's talking about him and not talking about what a good fight it was, you know. And you know, one of my favorite fights is Hagler-Hearns. And you watch that fight, and there's a million low blows in that fight. We always think about how great it was in that first round, you know, 8.5 minutes of fury. But there's a lot of low blows in that fight. And that's fighting, man. It's up to the ref to do something. And I asked, you know, Mora after the fight, you know, why warn a guy six times if you're not going to take a point? And he didn't answer me. He just walked away. But to me also, you know, why did he acknowledge that it was a low blow to Morris and then turn around and then start counting like it was a knockdown? Again, it was just inconsistent. And
yeah.
It was a crazy atmosphere there, man.
That was the frustrating part. The inconsistency of Mora, you know. Hey, Rob, I'm going to put you on hold, brother. Don't hang up, man. I got some other news, too. We're going to be giving out some autographed pictures. One of Shane Mosley and the other one of Moderosian to the listeners and fans of Leaving the Ring that call in. But let's pass it to some other fight fan.
I want one of Bella.
Why? Tell me about it, man. You know, a signed bikini, maybe a bottom, the bottom. I don't know.
Oh no.
Let's get it. CT wants to talk out of Beko and Modest. What's up, brother? You're on live right now and Leaving in the Ring.
There's the line and there's Dave.
Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, I think it was horrible. You know what I mean? I think the next fight, you know, the rematch they have, I think a pretty much no-nonsense referee would probably be Arthur McKinney.
Kenny Bayless.
Yeah, even Bayless. I was going to say
Arthur McKinney Jr.?
Yeah, you know, he's kind of like a no-nonsense type referee. He's one of those referees, he watches low blows and stuff like that to me. Or maybe Smoker.
I would say Smoker or Bayless.
Yeah.
Martin Mercanti is about as consistent as Lawrence Cole to me. You know, that Foreman fight, he just seems a little shaky, like, mentally. He kind of freaks out in big moments. You know, there are times when I like Mercanti, and then there's other times where I'm like, you know, the Mercanti, the cant there is, you know, being able to ref a fight. But I think that's what drove me crazy is that on the undercard, there was Kenny Bayless. He was there at the fight. You
right.
know, perfectly good Kenny Bayless sitting in the building, and you didn't use him. And, here, you know, I always get, even when I was just, you know, a fan watching fights at home, it always made me nervous when I would see a ref that I just don't see very often. And it's a big fight. And you go, why is this guy here? Why isn't the guy that I recognize in there? You know, where's Mill Blaine?
You know what? I've always thought the same
Mitch
thing.
Halpern.
Exactly.
You know? he always kind of go, uh-oh. And with Mora, I wasn't that worried about him. But then the more the fight went on, it was pretty unbelievable. I remember thinking at the when that knockdown was called, man, people were jumping up trying to rush the ring. They had to be moved over to the side and security taking them away. I really wouldn't have been surprised if there would have been things thrown in the ring. And there was an air of violence in the air. And it was because this ref was that bad.
Yeah.
He was just that bad.
Exactly. CT, I'm going to put you back in the hole, brother. We're going to pass in some other fight fans before we call in Glenn the Road Warrior Johnson. All right, bro? Don't hang up.
All right.
Anyways, let's get some other fight fans' opinions out there about this fight. We're going down the row, so if you're on hold, please don't hang up. We will get to you as soon as we can. But we're going to go with Victor, who wants to talk anything boxing. What's up, Victor? You're on live right now and Leaving the Ring. You there, Vic? Nope, he hung up. Couldn't wait. All right, let's get in another fight fan. Let's see. Let's get Carcinio, who wants to talk out of Beko versus Mars. What's up, Carcinio? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's going on, man? I'm still in shock, man. It's like everybody is stuck in this, like, matrix, and I'm like Neo watching everything go by, and I'm like, what fight is everybody watching? I really saw a lot of these punches landing on the belt line, and I actually made a video and showed every single blow and went there and showing these punches hit on the belt line.
See,
and
well, that's where you messed up, though, because, see, if you watched it the way my co-host had just mentioned right now, in the beginning of the fight, He put it. He put his hand exactly where the belt line was going to be at. And after Morris throwing punches, did not land in that exact point of what the referee Russell Moore was pointing out to. So he went against his own advice or his own rule. That's where things got messed up.
But a punch is not a low blow unless it's what below the belt. Not below the navel. It's below the belt. It's the referee's discretion.
So the belt line is actually measured by the navel. And then when everything kind of goes off of that, when they come in, and like Oscar De La Hoya used to wear a very high cup, and you couldn't see his belt.
I know,
his was
under his arm.
His belly button. Hang on, let me finish. It would ride above the belly button. And that's why the refs generally do a determination, okay, this is where your belly button is. This is the line of demarcation. Mora said it at the top of the belt line because Agbeko's belly button was almost visible. It was just right there. He wore his trunks legally. And he
but
set that line. And then he never,
what I was saying.
Right. He set the mark, and then he didn't live up to it. Everything that he set was underneath that mark. Doesn't matter
no
that it was on the belt line.
The
it was below.
I understand what you're saying, Gabe, but the problem that I had with it is everybody's acting like he was just blasting him below the belt, like below.
Have you watched the other video that's out that's actually showing all the low blows?
I know. Did you see any of that?
There's a ton of them. I was there live, and I watched it on tape. There was a lot of low blows. And here's the other thing, though. If there aren't low blows, then why are you warning him? Why did you warn him six times?
Because when someone gets close, whenever you've seen fights when the guy gets close or they hit him on the belt line, they say, keep him up. That's a normal
right,
thing.
Right, but the ones that he did actually later on warn him for were clearly below the belt. Now, I don't buy that whole deflection thing. The trajectory, if you watch the punch, was headed low regardless if his glove was there. It wasn't like it hit it and skittered off and then went low. It was going low. The glove was in
and
the channel.
You know, another thing, too.
Yeah,
I just
think it just overshadowed. It was just so blown out of proportion by social media, and that's what really just drove it crazy. And I'm like, there have been worser low blows in the history of boxing. I mean, this guy really got hit below the belt,
low blows, Carcino, but the ref either disqualified the fighter or took points away. With Mora, he didn't do a damn thing. And that's why a lot of people are upset about it, because he blatantly just walked away from it. He just blindsided that whole mark of what was happening at the moment. You know what I mean? And that's what was really shitty about that. Now, another thing, too, a lot of folks were saying, well, you know, Arbeco was holding behind the neck. If you watch a lot of those replays, he was throwing a jab and Morris was slipping it and then throwing the punch. So a lot of those punches were
held on to the back of his head and pulled it down.
Watching it at ringside, he did that a few times, but there was a lot of times where Mora would warn him for it, and he hadn't done it at all.
Exactly.
And I think that's really the key here, is that Mora was incredibly inconsistent. There were times when he called things that happened. There were times when he would call imaginary things. And then there was times that he would call things that didn't call things that he should have.
I want to do that too. But assessing fight, I think Mora, it was the best he's looked.
He did. He was
unbelievable, because that strategy to start off being that aggressive first, I think he really confused Agbeko. And I love the changes he did. I mean, I've never really saw that much boxing ability as far as not just throwing punches, but his balance was impeccable. But he was actually controlling how the fight was going to be dictated. Agbeko didn't know what was going to come next. He turned into a counterpuncher in like the fourth round. And he really, you know, he stepped on the gas, he took it off, he gave him different angles. I thought that this was the best he looked. And even without all this controversy, I just felt Agbeko really put himself behind the eight ball, just not being active, and he wasn't putting together combinations. He needed to go threes and fours, and he's got to dictate going to the body.
That's why you got to be pissed at Mora, because he stole that away from Morris. You know what I mean?
Of
course he did.
Getting hit in the testicles, something that's really going to drain your energy or hurt you in the ring. He was not being hurt by these shots.
let me hit
you
in the head numerous times, and let me see if you'll be able to run away, you know, a little faster. Look, anything below on your legs, on your hip, Carcinio, it's going to it takes a toll. It may not have a major pain, but it's going to take a toll, you know what I mean? If you get hit repeatedly on the arm, on the shoulders, it's going to take a toll. You're not going to be able to throw a jab a lot stiffer. You're not going to be able to throw it repeatedly a lot more. You know, the thing with Mora is that this fight, Morris was doing a fantastic job, but he had nothing to worry about because he had a referee that was incompetent. You imagine if he would have took points away, how much of the fight would have been changed? How more even would this fight had have been? There's a lot of scenarios there, and that's why you got to point out the bad of what happened on Saturday night with Mora. You can't sit there and go, well, it was a few shots, let's let it go. Come on, man, the rules are the rules, and the ref set the mark for the rule, and he didn't follow through. What is there to argue about? There's nothing to argue about that point.
I think that Mora made one bad call at the end, and because of that, everybody else has totally forgotten the rest of the fight. He made one bad call at the end, and that was a bad shot. I guess he wasn't in position to see it, but that was a bad call. The replay clearly shows, and that's the one he really got hit below the belt.
He said he was
in
position.
And it should have been called as a knockdown. But even without that, you know, I think it was bad because it took away a round where Beko was really starting to come on, and he was starting to take over the fight. And I didn't know if Morris had enough in him to withstand, because that was the first time Beko was really being as extra aggressive. He put a lot of pressure on Morris in that round.
Hey, of course,
one
you
bad
know.
Call. I don't understand that you can say one bad call.
Hey,
what about the 10th round? There was a low blow there that actually stopped the action. And
then he chose the replay, and then it landed on the belt line.
Carceno, let me finish my point.
Okay,
Mora himself has said that he should have taken a point right there, but he decided not to, but that he regrets the decision. So how can you tell me that he made one bad call when the ref himself says he's made two bad calls, that he should have called that knockdown? You know,
okay,
I'm sorry. I was there ringside. I was very close. And I also had two big screens giving me the replays. I've also watched the fight on tape. You're wrong. He landed low a lot.
A lot.
You know, you can bump your video all you want, but it doesn't change anything. It doesn't change the fact that you've seen the fight wrong. Sorry.
Jack.
Well, I'm just going off what I had. I paused it, you know, right there and just made sure the picture was there. So
I
could see exactly what
it
was.
It sounds to me like you watched the fight with an agenda. You're kind of making a video with an agenda as opposed to collecting data.
No, I didn't.
Really,
I don't have an agenda. What agenda do I have? I don't work for Golden Boy. Mahrez, I was tweeting this during the fight when it was going on currently, before there was even any controversy. I was like, what are they talking about? And that's why I couldn't believe Bernstein said. Bernstein is my favorite announcer of all time. So that's why I'm like, what is this? What is going on? What are they talking about?
It's all
on how
to watch
line.
Fight.
So I was stunned.
I thought Al did a fantastic job in watching it. And even to the point of saying, you know, I hate to be beating a dead horse, but he's killing this guy in the balls, you know.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's pretty much, you know, he was kind of forced to call the fight the way it was. And that's what a good ref does, you know. And I think you got to be balanced with it. There were low blows. And an argument that there isn't as many as everybody says, okay, I can kind of buy that. But there's still low blows. And there was still enough clear low blows.
Yeah,
not
and the ref is hired to protect the fighter and enforce those rules.
After a while, I mean, it absolutely did affect the fight because Morris was fighting really tough. That 11th round was about to be a fight of the year or a round of the year candidate. That low blow happened. The knockdown gets called. The next round, Morris isn't fighting with urgency anymore. He's fighting like a guy who's up a few rounds because he is. Because the ref just took a point and killed any chance of Agbeko being able to fight back and get himself into the fight. He altered the course of the fight, which is, to me, one of the most egregious things a ref can do.
Exactly.
Well, I agree with that because that knockdown did change everything. It took the thrill and everything out of the fight. I mean, when
totally.
That happened, it totally killed everything because, like I said, Beko was putting as much pressure. I thought he won the 10th, and I think he was definitely winning the 11th round. So instead of a 10-9 round for Beko, that turns into a 10-8 for Mahrez, and that one thing just instantly just killed the fight. It just took all the drama and everything out of the fight. Well, it would have been an epic 12th round. I just felt that Abeko needed to really sweep and sweep good in order to win, because I thought Morris had a lot of rounds in the bank.
Yep. All right, brother. I'm going to put you on hold because we got to get in Glenn Johnson. I appreciate you calling in, Carcino. It's always, a pleasure and fun to talk to you, man. Okay, bro?
All right.
Put you back on hold. You know, fight fans, you want to call in, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. I'm going to call in Glenn Johnson, man, and talk to him. I'm pretty sure he watched the fight as well. But I also want to talk about his upcoming fight with Lucian Bute at 168. And, you know, and see what else we can pull out of him when we talk to him. So dialing him up right now. Let's see if we can get a hold of him here, Gabe.
I always like hearing his accent. He's just one of my people to listen to talk about the fights. I think it'd be a fun fight, man. Bute Johnson. Anything with play.
Hold on, brother. You're breaking up really bad. Let me
Damn it.
No, it's not you. I think it's my Skype.
Sorry, I missed your call.
Okay. He's not answering, so I will call him back in a minute. I will let him know. Actually, I'll text him right now. Tell him that I'm calling him. But, yeah, you know, like I said, you know, some folks think that, you know, wasn't a lot of low blows. Some other folks don't. I tend to look at it saying no. There was a lot of low blows, and they weren't accounted for. And the thing, though, Mora, this is the thing, too, is when we were talking about this and we went back and looked at the tape, he set the mark. He didn't enforce it. You know, and fight fans, Carcino's not the only guy that's been telling me, like, no, they're, you know, this is the bell line. Listen, it's the ref. He put it. He's the one that put his foot down, said, this is where it's at. That's where it's at. We can't change the rules around to accommodate ourselves.
Yeah, it's like changing the strike zone, middle of the fight. Oh, by the way, I've decided it's going to be a little different. You know,
yeah.
It's like, wait a minute. You know, you said this, and now you're not living by your own rules. And man, if I was like Beko, I mean, that's kind of, you know, it's kind of quicksand. You're sitting there going, I can't get a break. What am I supposed to do? Do I hit low back? You know, it's just, I feel bad for the guy. You know, and rightly so. I mean, he didn't get robbed. He just, the refs started to keep it fair, and it didn't feel entirely fair. And you know, I'm not going to go out on a limb and say the guy was paid off by Golden Boy and all that because he's got a track record that says he's inconsistent. You know, and whatever that, whatever that is, I don't know. I'm not going to speculate and, you know, ruin a guy's reputation any more than it's already been ruined by himself. But, you know, to me, it's just, I don't want to see the guy again. You know, I'll see him on an undercard, maybe some retraining, go back, get some more, you know, get some more seasoning, talk to some veteran reps. As, you know, a lot of guys want him banned or suspended for life or all that. You know, you know, or take his paycheck. I don't really subscribe to that. I think the guy just needs to, he acknowledged his mistake. That's number one. Now he needs to go back for some retraining. Now you just lose the big gigs. You know, you messed up your chance for being the next Kenny Bayless or one of the guys that we all like. Now you're
right.
Now every, you know, instead of, you know, like Richard Steele for years had, you know, every time he would show up to a fight or be calling a fight, somebody had to yell out, stop the fight, Rich, you know, even before the fight started. Now Mora is going to have to hear, you know, take a point, ref, for the rest of his life. You know, that's his. That's going to be his legacy. And it's hard for a ref to kind of get redemption. You know, they've just got to be consistent over the long haul, and then we kind of grow to like them. And you know, they get some good stoppages right on time, or they take points when they should. He's going to have to go that route for a long time because it's not like, you know, Mora can come back and knock out his opponent, and then we all love him again. Like if Morris wins the next fight and does it in a clean fashion, everybody's going to be right back on the Twitter bandwagon. You know, that's just the nature of the sport. Mora is a tougher road than that. You know, so
yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, you know,
what's up with Glenn Johnson?
I'm gonna call him up again right now. Just text him and
damn,
let him know. I know.
He's
you
fired.
Know, what can? At the same time, I'm reading what you know, Marcos Madonna is tweeting out there. He's frustrated, saying that, you know, he wants to fight in the States. If not, let him fight in Argentina. And I actually tweeted to him, said, hey, man, I've been trying to get a hold of your camp to get a hold of you to get you on the radio, you know. But let's see.
Marcos, I can make 140. That's all I'm saying.
I heard Mora can make 140, too.
Wow.
Mora with this stuff, you know.
See that.
everybody on that card, too. You know, like,
I miss your call. Leave a message, and I'll return your call as soon as I can.
Well, he's not answering, so we'll try him a little later. Try him a little later and stuff. If you guys want right now, I mean, we should put up the Alfredo Angulo interview before we go any further.
Sure.
Or also, we can take in some other fight calls, fight fans that are calling in right now. Maybe let's take a few calls right now and see what some other folks are saying about the Morris and the Beckel fight. If you want to call in and talk to us about it and tell us your opinion, if you agree with us that you know, having our rant about what referee Russell Mora did on Saturday night, you certainly can. Or if you disagree with this, you sure can still call us and let us know how you saw and you know how you saw the fight happen on Saturday night. 347-215-7598. Here on Leaving in the Ring. Let's get deep. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving in the Ring. What's on your mind?
Yo, what's happening, Big Dog?
What's up, brother?
How everybody doing?
Doing good.
I watched the fight a couple times already, man, and, you know.
And what do you think, bro?
A lot of people would have been got disqualified by then, but, it, you know, but he didn't, there wasn't even a point, you know, and, you know. Personally, I think man shouldn't be able to ref for a while. People talking about putting them in classes and make them do it. You shouldn't ref. You shouldn't be able to ref at least a year, and then you gotta go to classes. I make them go. You can't go to the classes. You gotta go to the classes soon. Like they need to make them go to classes real soon. But you know, and
I don't think classes.
My initial feeling was they should just ban his ass, not let him ref no more. Just throw him out. That was my initial. You know, after thinking about it and stuff, who knows? You know what really. Why dude didn't take any points or didn't, you know, who knows?
Well, let me ask you this.
I don't want to speculate nothing, but.
Let me ask you this. Should they allow him to re-ref the rematch fight to see if he redeems himself?
Shit, no. Hell no. I didn't put his ass back in there. You know, you can't reward him with something like that, man. That dude, I'm just glad. Beckel's okay, and you know nothing fool happened.
I don't know if he's okay, man.
Nothing crazy happened, you know.
Let's see.
It's hard to kick it because everybody wants that belt.
He's not okay. No. Look at the way he's talking. He's not okay. You know.
What's happening? Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, brother.
All right, I think. Fox and Darrell is going to be good, man. We got so many fights coming up. There's a lot of news going on right now. You got Man Sauer fighting tomorrow night, too. That ain't even on TV, I don't think. I wanted to go see it, but I didn't go again. That's going to be a good fight tomorrow night. You got Hank Lundy fighting tomorrow night.
Against David Diaz. That's another good
Johnson,
fight.
That's going to be a good little test for Boutte. I think Boutte should stop Glenn Johnson. Probably late. Might be early. Who knows? I don't see Johnson being able to. I don't know. Boutte throws some fast punches, man, and he loves this uppercut. And that's going to be a good one. Got so many good fights coming up, brother.
You do, bro. You know, Klitschko, Adamek, a lot of good things.
I forgot about that.
You know?
Yep. So that's right there. That's the week after my birthday. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Hey, Cali's getting old, man. Yeah. And when's Cochran gonna fight again? That's what I want to know.
You know, they told me they're kind of holding off on him for towards the later part of the year. So I'm not sure. They may try to work him in September for this the Hopkins thing.
Okay, that's good.
I'm waiting to find out right now. They kind of, because he lost and then they had to rebuild him, kind of gave him a lot of slots that they would have meted out over the year. And so now they're kind of holding back and waiting. So I'm supposed to talk to
him. Yeah, five fights. How many fights? He fought a few times since he got out of the joint.
What, five times now? So, yeah, I mean, that's a lot.
Five times.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't listen to people when they say Kirkman ain't got it, and what's the other dude's name? Lemieux? You know, I think the boy got it, but they came across some opposition that put it on their ass that night.
Yeah, that's the
they
thing.
They got beat
and,
up.
You know, and they're young guys.
I think they
man.
Still got it, but they're young, yeah. So.
And young in mentality. I mean, Kirkland's a little older. He's, what, 27 now? But mentality and discipline, all that stuff, for both of them. I don't know if you read my article with the interview with Lemieux and his trainer, Russ Amber, but you know, David's only 22. And
22.
Russ was like, why are we doing an elimination fight? Why are we about to fight for the title? You know, this kid is young. And
right.
As it turned out, David, he had fought in December. He takes 2 months off. Literally, like, doesn't come to the gym. Can't get him back in the gym. He's out being a 22-year-old. They get this fight. He comes in and does an 8-week camp. And you know that camp's not about fine-tuning his ass. It's about dropping the weight that he's probably put on. And those 2 months, he was gone.
Yeah.
That's not the way to prepare him. That's why they brought him down. He's training with Sergio Martinez now as he's getting ready for Darren Barker. But more importantly, Russ brought him down. It's kind of a big move for Russ is a big deal. I mean, in Canada, you know, he handles the Olympic team. He's a high-level amateur coach, also a pro coach, dad champion. And he said, you know, let me bring my kid down. He can look at not just a champion in our weight class, but one of the best fighters in the sport. What's his work ethic? What's his character like outside the ring? You know, let's let the kid see what it's like to train as a champion in order to become a champion. I think it's great for David. They've been very, very positive about the whole experience.
D, I'm going to put you on hold, brother, because I do have them texting me saying that Glenn is ready for us. So I'm going to put you back on hold, bro.
All right, man.
So let's see if we can get a hold of Glenn.
I was going to hear from you, man.
Let's see if we can get a hold of him. What do you mean? You hear from me all the time. I call you every day.
Not you.
Oh, you're talking about D. Hell yeah.
Yeah, I always like D's call.
Let's see if we can get a hold of him. Do you know the way to San Jose? I do know the way. Okay, well.
Sorry, I missed your call.
Ah, he's not answering. So then let them know. Damn it. So I think we should just roll over to the.
All those crank calls that you've been leaving for him.
I heard it was Lucien Boutte crank calling him. That's why he's not answering. You know? Let's go with the Angulo. I'm pretty sure everybody wants to hear what El Perro had to say about signing with Golden Boy and about his upcoming fight that's happening in Mexico this Saturday, right? It's this Saturday, right? Not Friday.
Yeah.
Saturday.
Yeah.
Saturday, Mexicali. And Gabriel Montoya's attempt to make it out there, man. Hopefully he doesn't get kidnapped. You know?
I am. I'm very excited. I priced mustaches, you know, disguises. Yeah, I'm all ready to go. I got my Groucho glasses. No one will know it's me. They won't want to kidnap me. I can't wait, man. You got my hotel set. I'm going to take a train out.
You
know?
You're going to wear a shirt that says, I'm with Pocho? Have an arrow pointing out at Ernesto?
I'm going to have a readout of my bank account. Like, trust me, you don't want to kidnap me.
Yeah, exactly.
I got nothing. Seriously. You want a dollar? You want a cigarette? That's about it. You know, I'll give you that.
All
it
right,
should be fun, man. I can't wait.
Yeah. And this was a really fun interview, too, as well. We know we had a pre-recorded for everybody just because the fact that Perro was in camp and wouldn't be able to come on because it's his resting time on a Thursday because it's been so close to Saturday, so resting time. So we pre-recorded. We try to ask all the questions that the boxing heads want to hear from, you know, Alfredo Angulo, from Mati Rosian, all the way down to what's happening with Golden Boy, Canelo. You name it, we asked it. I hope we asked everything. If not, you can always tweet us and email us at leavingthering@gmail.com. It's not a problem. So let's set it up. And while we're doing that, I will try to find out what's going on with Mr. Glenn, the Road Warrior Johnson. But here it is, El Perro. Dueñas con la Gabriel Montoya.
Oh,
see, you want to take over? Because that's about as good as my Spanish is going to get today.
Okay. Hola, perro.
habla, bueno, de Libre en the Ring, Dave Duenes y Gabriel Montoya, también con Max Boxing. ¿Cómo estás?
Pues muy bien, llegando a entrenar y terminando de comer.
Bueno, buen provecho entonces. It's just coming back from training and eating.
Do you want to go? Do you want to start first, Gabe, or do you want me to go?
Why don't you start?
Okay. Hey, Alfredo, thank you very much, man, for taking the time to speak to us. So, why was there so much secrecy of you signing with Golden Boy?
Bueno, primero, muchas gracias por tomarte el tiempo de hablar un rato con nosotros. Y él quiere saber por qué tanto secreto en lo de tu firmar con Golden Boy.
No, al contrario, gracias a ustedes por llamar y no fue el secreto, nunca, no fue ningún secreto, fue algo que se dio sin querer, sinceramente, porque ellos se ofrecieron a comprar mi contrato con Gary Shaw, porque se dieron cuenta que yo ya no iba a trabajar con Gary, que yo prefería hacer mis propias peleas que seguir trabajando con Gary Shaw.
No, he says thanks to you for giving him a call. And about Golden Boy, it wasn't that it was secretive. It was just something that was unexpected. Sincerely, it just happened that they came to buy his contract from Gary Shaw once they realized that he was not going to work with him anymore.
Now that he has a new marriage with with Golden Boy, leaving Gary Shaw, what was lucrative that Golden Boy presented to him? I mean, is he are they talking about building him into a star, and are we talking about HBO appearances back again?
¿Qué fue lo que tú consideraste que era atractivo o lucrativo del contrato con Golden Boy, ya que pues tienes esta nueva relación con ellos? ¿Fue algo de que ellos te ofrecieron volver a hacerte una estrella o regresar otra vez a HBO o algo en particular que a ti te atrajo?
Pues yo creo que las dos empresas más grandes que hay de boxeo actualmente es de la de Bob Barron y Golden Boy, son los que las empresas pues que hacen más box actualmente. Y yo creo que con cualquiera de ellas dos se habló, pero con la que llegó a un acuerdo fue con Golden Boy.
Okay. Now, the two biggest companies in boxing right now are Bob Arum's company and Golden Boy. With both of them, they talked, and it was just with Golden Boy that an arrangement could be made.
How involved have they been with this promotion, or has this been strictly a federal promotion, and also how many tickets have now been sold?
How involved was who, Golden Boy?
How involved has Golden Boy been with this promotion, or has this just been strictly a federal promotion? And just if you could talk about how the promotion's been going and everything.
Pero, ¿cuán envuelto ha estado Golden Boy con la promoción de tu pelea? ¿O han estado envueltos o solamente ha sido estrictamente perro? Y bueno, si nos puedes hablar un poco sobre cómo va la promoción, cuántos tickets se han vendido, etcétera.
Pues, Golden Boy no ha intervenido en nada. Golden Boy, en lo único que nos echó la mano fue con lo de la televisión, la organización, las peleas y todo lo he hecho yo y mi equipo de trabajo. Perros Promotion es el que ha hecho esta función del 20 de agosto. Y el último reporte que yo tuve es de que había más de 20,500 tickets vendidos, ya repartidos. Al estado le caben 27,000 gente, así que yo creo que vamos por un buen camino.
Okay. No, Golden Boy hasn't intervened at all in anything related to the promotion. The only aspect in which they gave us a hand was on the TV deal. But all the organization, the fights, and everything was all Perro and his team. He also says that the last report he got from them was that over 20,500 tickets have been sold already. The stadium has a capacity for 20,000 people. So according to him, you know, everything is going very well.
27,000. He's working now with a new trainer. If you could talk about who he's working with, and did he bring in Daryl Hudson for this training camp?
Tú estás trabajando con un nuevo entrenador. ¿Puedes hablarnos un poco de ese nuevo entrenador? ¿Y trajiste también a Daryl Hudson a este campamento?
Sí, Daryl Hudson es mi preparador físico. Él estuvo todo el campamento conmigo. Es una de las personas que me ha apoyado mucho. Y mi nuevo entrenador que me dio para esta pelea se llama Francisco Martínez. Y gracias, no sé, es un amigo mío que ya me ha tenido la oportunidad de haberme ayudado en otras ocasiones. Era lo que tenía más rápido a la mano. Y gracias a Dios hemos hecho una gran preparación y un gran trabajo. Han hecho muy buena mancuerna entre Daryl Hudson y él para llegar al 100% el 20 de agosto a la pelea.
Yes, Daryl Hudson is with him. He's still his physical, conditioning trainer. He says that he's a person that has supported him a lot, and he's still there with him. His new trainer, his name is Francisco Martinez. He's a friend of Alfredo, and he has had the chance to help him in other occasions. He says they have been able to put together a very good plan. They've been working great, and you know, everything has been going very well so that he can be at 100% come the fight on August 20th.
Now, I heard that you've been bringing some Southern California prospects and fighters to help you out get in preparation. Can you tell us a little bit about that, and who are some of the fighters? I believe one of them is Google from Oxnard, California, who's a welterweight, has came down to help you out. How's that been going for you?
Has estado trayendo prospectos y boxeadores de California, de la parte baja de California, para que te ayuden en el campamento, uno de ellos de Oxnard. ¿Puedes hablarnos un poco de eso y si puedes mencionar algunos de estos prospectos que te han ayudado?
Nada más vino, sinceramente no recuerdo su nombre, vino solamente uno de Oxnard, estuvo aquí al principio de mi campamento, me llevó nada más como una o dos semanas y después se fue. El trabajo más fuerte lo hice con unos sparring de Sonora, con unos peleadores de Sonora, de Hermosillo, Sonora, México.
Honestly, I don't remember his name. It was only one fighter from Oxnard that joined the training camp when it was just starting, and he helped him for 1 or 2 weeks and then returned to Oxnard. The hardest work of sparring has been done with sparring partners from Hermosillo, Sonora.
Now, what is Golden Boy promising for the future for him? I mean, where is he looking at where his career is going to go? I mean, are they talking about redeeming him to be back in the States, or is because Golden Boy has held plenty of fights in Mexico, so are they just talking of keeping him out there and forgetting about coming back to United States?
¿Qué es lo que está prometiendo Golden Boy en términos de tu futuro? ¿Prometen algo de redención en términos de volver a traerte a escena acá en Estados Unidos? ¿O Golden Boy también tiene historial de hacer muchas peleas en México? ¿La idea es que te mantengas peleando en México o venir a Estados Unidos? ¿Qué prometen ellos?
Pues nosotros, como yo le había comentado anteriormente, mi visa pues ya está aprobada, solamente estamos esperando que nos llamen para recogerla. Y lo que Golden Boy pues prometió es mantenernos ocupados por mientras aquí en México, en lo que nos hablan para entregarnos la visa y poder seguir peleando en Estados Unidos y no estar tanto tiempo parado.
Okay. I mentioned before, my visa has been approved. I'm just waiting for them to call me to pick it up. And so what Golden Boy has promised for the moment is to keep us busy in Mexico while we wait for that visa and can come back to fight in the U.S. so that he's not there, you know, just, you know, in a layoff for so long.
So
go ahead, Dave.
I just want to have my follow-up question is that, so if it's, you know, in his layoff here, and if it continuously stays in Mexico, are we talking about no-name fighters or recognized fighters that he's going to be facing, you know, to keep him sharp and keep him continuously in the ring? Or are we talking about eventually bringing some real competition to Mexico for him to face?
Si mientras te mantienes esperando por la visa y estás activo en México, los planes son continuar peleando boxeadores en México que tal vez no son tan reconocidos por nombre acá en Estados Unidos, solo para mantenerse ocupado con eso, o se planifica llevar a boxeadores reconocidos a México a pelear contigo allá.
Pues yo creo que eso no es ningún inconveniente, el que se hagan, que se llegue a hacer alguna pelea grande aquí en México con algún peleador reconocido. Yo no creo que HBO tenga ningún problema en venir a transmitir aquí en México para Estados Unidos una pelea grande con un peleador.
No, I don't think there's any inconvenience in making a big fight in Mexico mm-hmm. with some well-recognized boxer. I don't think that HBO will have any problem in going to Mexico and broadcasting a fight from Mexico to the U.S.
With Golden Boy getting involved, Does that give you hope that you're going to be back in the United States? I mean, do you think they would have signed on to be your promoter if there was just no chance of you coming back?
Con ahora con HBO siendo tus nuevos promotores, ¿te da eso más esperanza de regresar pronto a Estados Unidos? En el sentido de que tú pienses que ellos nunca te hubieran firmado si no estuvieran seguros de que ibas a regresar a Estados Unidos.
Yo creo que ellos han tenido la confianza en mí y se los agradezco, porque a pesar de que por el momento no puedo pelear en Estados Unidos, ellos tuvieron la confianza de firmarme y de creer en mí y están seguros y tienen plena esperanza de que yo voy a regresar muy pronto a las arenas de Estados Unidos sin ningún problema, primeramente.
They have had a lot of trust in me, and I'm very grateful for that, because despite the fact that for the moment I can't fight in the U.S., they had the trust, and they, you know, signed me, and they believed in me, and they're sure that I will be able to go back to seeing in the U.S.
after all this time away from the ring, has it been easy to get back down to 154? I'm assuming this is a 154-pound fight. Do you feel that you've matured and moved up to 160, or are you still going to be a junior middleweight?
Después de todo este tiempo que estuviste inactivo, él está suponiendo que la pelea el 20 de agosto va a ser en las 154 libras. ¿Quieres saber si se te hizo difícil bajar a las 154 y si piensas quedarte ahí en las 154 o subir a las 160?
Pues, por la verdad, mi cuerpo, soy un 154 natural. A pesar de que estuve un año parado sin hacer nada, solamente estaba arriba de la 154, estaba son 5, 6, estaba en 173, 175 libras, o sea que es más, a pesar de un año que estaba parado, no batallé hasta ahorita, y yo creo que ahí vamos a estar en las 154 libras todavía por algún tiempo. Si se presenta algún pleito importante o algo que nos convenga en 160 libras, no tenemos ningún problema por pelear en las 160 libras tampoco.
Says that his body is 144 pounds naturally, and despite the fact that he was not fighting for over a year or not doing anything for over a year, he went above 154, not by that much, just to about 173, 175, despite not being fighting for a year. It hasn't been hard to go to 154, and so he says that, you know, that's his weight and that's where he will stay for a while. But having said that, if there is any fight that comes up that is important or that is something that he deems it's convenient for him, then he has no problem in going to 160.
Let's talk a little bit about Canelo, who Saul Alvarez, who signed with Golden Boy as well. Perro, do you feel in any way that you have a possibility of fighting him this year, or maybe early next year, or do you think that there's a little bit of Golden Boy signing you to keep you away from him?
Perdona, Dave, ¿estamos hablando de Canelo?
Yeah.
Okay. Pero se esperaba que hubiera una posibilidad de que tú te enfrentaras con Canelo fuera más tarde este año o el año que viene. ¿Tú crees que Golden Boy firmándote haya sido un poco una movida para mantenerte lejos de Canelo?
Pues yo no creo así, porque el Consejo Mundial de Boxeo hace dos semanas mandó un pleito obligatorio entre Van Marcelo Soya y yo, una eliminatoria, y el ganador va a quedar como retador número uno para enfrentar al Canelo, yo creo, entrando el próximo año. Y como yo les he comentado a muchos fans, el que yo haya firmado con Golden Boy no quiere decir que no vaya a enfrentar yo al Canelo. Al contrario, yo creo que es una gran posibilidad para Golden Boy, sabiendo que los dos somos peleadores de la misma empresa. Yo creo que no habría ningún problema en hacer esa pelea entre Canelo y yo.
El pleito obligatorio del que hablaste tú vas a ser uno de esos boxeadores.
En la
eliminatoria.
Mandó la eliminatoria entre Vanes Martirosoya y el Fred Angulo.
Okay. No, I don't. He says he doesn't think that way because the WBC ordered about like 2 weeks ago. It ordered a mandatory fight between him and Vanes Martirosyan, and the winner of that fight will be the number one challenger for Canelo next year. So he has said that to fans before. He thinks, you know, the fight is going to happen, and he thinks that it's a very good opportunity for Golden Boy to have that fight, given that now both fighters are within the company.
Now, even though that is WBC guaranteeing that, does he have a preference of money? Because the whole issue of him facing Sergio Martinez was a money problem for him. Is he getting guaranteed money from Golden Boy if he's success over Martirosyan?
Esta pelea que ordenó el WBC, si tú ganaras la pelea contra Vanes y fueras a pelear contra Canelo, Golden Boy te está ofreciendo el dinero suficiente o como tú lo prefieres, y a lo que él se refiere es a que en el pasado se habló de una pelea con Sergio Martínez, esa pelea no se dio por asuntos de dinero. Y él quiere saber, bueno, que no vaya a pasar lo mismo con esta.
Yo creo que si se diera una pelea entre Canelo y yo creo que el dinero no fuera ningún problema, porque, como le digo, tenemos la misma empresa y yo creo que la televisión sabe que sería un gran pleito que mucha gente quiere ver, así que yo no creo que hubiera ningún problema con el dinero.
No, if Canelo and I were to fight, I don't think there will be any problem with money because, as I mentioned, we're both with the same company, and the TV networks also know that it's a very good fight that a lot of people want to see. So I don't really think that money will be a problem.
After everything that's happened, how good is it just to be on the job and just a few days away from getting back in the ring and doing what you do best?
Después de todo lo que ha pasado, ¿cómo se siente estar de vuelta en tu trabajo y a tan pocos días de volver otra vez al cuadrilátero y hacer lo que te gusta hacer?
Pues estoy muy, muy contento, la verdad, porque tengo el apoyo de mucha gente. Abrí mi cuenta de Twitter y sinceramente pues la semana pasada, el 11 de agosto, fue mi cumpleaños, y en 29 años nunca me había felicitado tanta gente y nunca había tenido el apoyo de tanta gente como toda la gente que me deseó un feliz cumpleaños y me deseó todo el apoyo para el 20 de agosto. Y por eso yo estoy muy, muy contento de regresar otra vez al ring. Y estoy el doble de contento porque voy a pelear aquí en mi casa, en Mexicali.
He says he's very, very, he's truly very, very happy because he has the support of a lot of people. He opened recently his Twitter account, and 11th of August was his birthday. He says that in 29 years, never so many people have congratulated him and wished him happy birthday like this time. And, you know, a lot of people have also sent him their messages of support for the fight, the 20th of August. So he's very, very happy to go back, and he says he's doubly happy because he's going to be fighting at home in Mexicali.
Does he know anything about his opponent, has he watched him, has he studied him, or is this someone that he's going to be flying blind a little bit going in there and having to figure him out?
Tú sabes bastante, o sea, sabes de tu oponente, lo has visto pelear o has visto tape de él, o es un oponente al que no conoces muy bien y al que vas a ir un poco a ciegas a tratar de adivinarlo, ¿no? En el ring.
Pues sé que es un gran peleador, que aguanta. Sí, he visto en dos ocasiones he visto dos videos de él. Simplemente se mira que es un buen peleador, es alto. Así que yo creo que va a ser una gran pelea. Así que mucha gente se va a dar cuenta que el año que no estuve en el ring no me ha afectado. Yo se los he dicho que yo nací para pelear, y el 20 de agosto se van a dar cuenta que parece que nunca me fui del los cuadriláteros.
He's a great fighter. He can take a hit, he can take a punch, and has a good endurance. And he says that in two occasions he has seen videos of him. He thinks he's a good fighter. He's tall, and he believes it's going to be a great fight, and that a lot of people will realize that the time that he was away from the ring didn't really affect him, that he was born to fight. And on August 20th, people will realize that, that layoff really didn't affect him that much.
Avanz Matarossian, what is his thoughts about him? And, Matarossian is obviously a tough contender and a vocal guy, in that. He's very vocal and calling everybody that he can at 160, from 160 down to 154. What is his thoughts and his assessment of Matarossian?
Van es una persona que bastante habla, ¿no? Bastante, y se pasa retando a muchos boxeadores a pelear entre las 154 y las 160 libras. ¿Quiere saber cuál es tu opinión de él? ¿Qué piensas tú de Matarossian?
Que es un buen peleador. Pues si a él le gusta hablar y ese es su estilo, pues ya él sabrá, ¿me entiendes? Pero yo soy un peleador que no le gusta llamar la atención de esa forma hablando, sino haciendo mi trabajo arriba del ring, y lo respeto como un peleador. Creo yo que si llegan a un acuerdo entre ambas compañías, la de él y la mía, yo creo que se va a dar un excelente pleito para los fans.
I think he's a good fighter. If he likes to talk, that's his style, and that's up to him. But he says that as far as himself is concerned, as far as Pedro is concerned, he doesn't like to talk, to just call the attention of people like that. He prefers to do his job in the ring. But he respects Vanes, and he says that if an agreement can be reached between his company and Vanes' company, he believes they can make a very good fight for fans.
Where did the relationship between him and Gary Shaw, where did it fall apart at? I mean, because we're talking about two guys that when you saw them at the fights together, they were close. Gary Shaw referred him as a son. He went to Gary's father's funeral. What happened there? I mean, does he really know what happened, or is it just too much for him to get into about?
¿En qué momento, dónde o en qué momento fue que la relación tuya con Gary Shaw se rompió? Porque eran dos personas que eran muy cercanas. Y bueno, él quiere saber, ¿no?, que en qué momento fue que pasó. Pero bueno, si piensas que es como mucho para meterte en eso ahora, pues no hay problema tampoco.
No, ningún problema. No sé yo, la verdad, en qué momento se rompió. Creo yo que se rompió en el momento en el que no sé, uno acuerdo en la pelea de Sergio Martínez y yo por el dinero, porque se supone que normalmente el promotor agarra el 20% de lo que da la televisión y el peleador el 80%. aquí era al revés. Gary agarraba el 70 y yo agarraba el 30. Así que, ¿con qué razón no me iba a decir hijo si yo le daba ganar mucho dinero? Él ganaba mucho dinero conmigo. Y en el momento que yo me di cuenta que él estaba pues agarrando más dinero que yo, que soy el peleador, pues creo que ahí fue cuando se rompió todo, donde no llegamos ya a un acuerdo con el dinero, cuando Alfredo Angulo abrió los ojos.
Says that he doesn't really know exactly in what moment the relationship was broken, but he thinks it is when an agreement couldn't be reached for him to fight Sergio Martinez. And because normally the promoter is supposed to get 20% of the purse, whereas the fighter gets 80%. In his case, it was all the opposite, and Gary was getting 70%, and he was going to receive only 30%. So then when he realized that, you know, Gary was just earning a lot of money with him, the moment he realized that he was making even more money than him, who was the fighter, that's the point where he thinks the relationship broke. It was pretty much the moment Pedro opened his eyes.
So is he surprised that Timothy Bradley is also in the same position that he once was as well?
¿Te sorprende, dado esto, que Timothy Bradley esté ahora en la misma posición en la que estabas tú?
No me sorprende porque a Timothy Bradley le pasó lo mismo que yo. Le pasó lo mismo. Gary no quiso darle el dinero que realmente le correspondía a Timothy. Y pasó exactamente lo mismo. Gary empezó a hablar mal de Timothy, como lo empezó a hacer de mí. Empezó a hablar mal de mí. Y qué promotor va a hablar mal de su peleador. Solamente el que le tiene más amor al dinero que a su peleador. Y así, simplemente es Gary. Quiere más el dinero que a la gente, que lo aprecia, de verdad.
No, he says he wasn't surprised at all by what happened with Timothy Bradley, because what happened to him was exactly the same that as what happened to Pedro, that Gary didn't want to give him the money that corresponded, that belonged to Tim. And he says that, you know, exactly the same happened after that. Gary started talking badly about Timothy Bradley the same way he did with Pedro, and he says that's what happens with promoters that want the money more than their fighters and that appreciate the money more than the people that really appreciate them.
If you had to do it over again, I'm just curious, you know, would you have started promoting yourself in Mexico sooner? Why did he wait so long to begin promoting himself on his own?
Si tuvieras que hacer esto todo de nuevo, ¿cómo lo harías? ¿Te hubieras quizás empezado a promoverte a ti mismo en peleas en México desde antes? ¿Y por qué esperaste tanto tiempo para empezar a pelear en México? Bajo tu propia promoción.
Porque pensamos que se podían arreglar las cosas con Gary. Y desgraciadamente nunca se llegó a un acuerdo. Gary se pasó todo un año diciendo que ya no se iba a conseguir una pelea, que ya casi lo tenía y que ya sí, hasta que llegó el momento en que yo ya no le creí y tuve que empezar a formar yo, a hacer mi propia empresa para hacer peleas por mí mismo. Porque perder un año, un boxeador que pierde un año es muchísimo tiempo porque es un deporte muy corto, así que creo yo que sí me tardé un poco, pero era porque tenía todavía un poco de credibilidad en él.
He says, because they were thinking that things could still work out one way or another with Gary, but it they never reached an agreement. They waited. In the meantime, Gary was always saying during that whole year that he was very close to give him a fight, that he the fight was almost there, until, you know, there was a moment where he just didn't believe him anymore.
Hmm.
And realized he had to start building his own company so that he could promote himself, you know, to fight in Mexico, because a year is way too long time for a fighter to be doing nothing, because the sport has a short lifetime. And he says he took long to do it, but that's because he still had that trust that things could work out.
And finally, just for me, my last question. I'm curious, you know, the Martin Rosen fight is there. It's been ordered by the WBC. But how many fights do you think you're going to need to be back to 100% and ready for a high-level fight?
La pelea con Banes ya la ordenó el Consejo Mundial de Boxeo. Pero él se pregunta cuántas peleas tú crees que vayas a necesitar para volver a estar al 100% como para una pelea así de alto nivel.
Mañana mismo, si quieres. Yo estoy listo siempre.
Para eso, pero... It says, tomorrow, if you want, I'm always ready.
I have only...
Por eso le digo que el 20 de agosto se van a dar cuenta que... Parece que nunca me fui del ring.
That's why I said that on August 20th people will realize that it is as if I had never been out of the ring at all.
I have just two more questions and then we'll let Perro go and stuff. My first question is because I know he's talked about this before. I know he's talked about this with Gabriel, and I know he's talked about this with Ernesto. But for the listeners that haven't had a chance to read the article or listen to our sister station, Boxing Lab, why did he get deported, and how did that come about?
Has hablado de esto ya varias veces, pero él dice que para los las personas que estén escuchando Libre in the Ring y que no hayan escuchado antes a la estación hermana de Boxing Lab o que no hayan leído los artículos que han salido, ¿podrías a ellos explicarles un poco de cómo fue que fuiste deportado y cómo pasó eso?
Para empezar, nunca fui deportado. Eso nunca pasó. Yo salí por mi propio pie. Se me venció mi visa, no la renovaron, ni el promotor no la renovó a tiempo, pero nunca fui deportado, que eso que quede claramente, nunca fui deportado. Yo salí porque mis abogados legales así lo decidieron, que yo tenía que salir para volver a tramitar mi visa de fuera.
He says, first of all, I was never deported. I left the country by my own because the visa expired and his promoter didn't renew the visa on time. But he wants to make it clear he was never deported. He left the country because his lawyers decided that that was the best and they advised him to.
Why was that the best advice? I mean, why couldn't he have went himself to renew that visa? Hello?
Yes.
I, My question was, why was that the best suggestion from his lawyers? Why wasn't he able to go back himself? Why did he need the promoters to do it for him?
Porque el pregunta por qué tus abogados pensaron que esa era la mejor opción. Y por qué tenía la visa
qué?
La tenía que
¿Por qué? ¿Qué? Perdón.
¿Por qué los abogados pensaron que esa era la mejor opción? ¿Y por qué dependías del promotor para que renovara la visa? ¿Por qué no lo podías hacer tú por tu cuenta?
Los abogados así lo decidieron. ¿Por qué? No lo sé. Porque no conozco yo de las leyes de migración. Simplemente eso fue lo que a mí me dijeron. ¿Y por qué mi promotor? Porque mi promotor era el petitioner de mi visa. Que trabajaba para él, era el que apoyaba mi visa, que okay. Iba a tener trabajo seguro.
Why the lawyers determined that was the best, he doesn't know. He doesn't know it because he doesn't know the immigration laws. That's what they told him, and he, you know, followed their advice. And as far as the promoter renewing the visa, that was because his promoter was the petitioner of his visa through work.
Okay. Perro, thank you very much again to have the time to speak to us here with myself, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya, and with Z, who's our interpreter here for Leaving the Ring. All right, and we are back. Everybody, listen, because we've got people on Facebook, on our fan page, on Facebook, and on Twitter. This was a pre-recorded interview. We try to get as many questions as we can. I know a lot of folks are throwing out particular questions we're going to be able to get. Angulo again. My co-host Gabriel is taking a trip to Mexicali to see him. Hey, Glenn Johnson called me up. He said I was sleeping, my brother, by accident. But he's aware that we want to get him on the radio here. So I'm going to give him a call. Gabriel, you there, brother? Did you fall asleep?
I did fall asleep. I'm here. I said, hey, I had a nice, lovely, you know, little snack. Just waiting. I think we were pretty comprehensive with Beto. I can't wait to see him. He seems so excited about going and all those people. I've been communicating with him like last week.
Right.
And everybody's just really excited. I'm excited to see 20,000 people in one stadium. That's the most people. I've seen Beto live a few times. I've never seen him perform in front of a crowd like that. So I'm curious to see how he responds and just what that feels like. You know, it's pretty rare to get in front of that many people and get ringside in an event like that. So it'd be awesome, man. I can't wait.
I can't wait either, you know. I'm going to patch him in. I'm just hoping that my Skype here doesn't act up, you know, and because what's happening is sometimes when we patch somebody in, you start sounding like a robot talking, you know what I mean? So let's just make sure. I'm gonna call him in right now. He's aware that we're calling him in. He was sleeping a little earlier, taking a cat nap, which I like to do all the time myself. But let's get the Road Warrior, Glenn Johnson, on the line with us. Talk to us about his fight, his upcoming fight, November. I can't remember the date. What was it, November 5th?
Yeah.
Hello, Mr. Glenn Johnson. Are you there, brother?
How are you, man? Yes, sir.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, man. Can't complain. Hanging in there.
Hey, Glenn, you know what? One of my favorite fighters, you know, you've been on the show numerous times with us and very, very knowledgeable. You know, when you retire from the ring, I'd love to see you become a commentator, you know, because we always need good, knowledgeable boxing heads to talk about the fight intelligently for, you know, newcomers to come along so they can understand the sport. Because you break down the sport, man, just fantastic. And then when you get in the ring, you really follow through with a lot of the stuff that you preach. You know, you're definitely somebody that practices what you preach. Now, Lucian Bute, 168, being considered the king of 168, which I can argue about that because there's, I think there's still some questions left out there for Andre World and Carl Froch to have an argument or a debate about that. But you're getting the meal ticket here. Now, how did that come about?
Well, you know, I have to give credit to Showtime. They You know, they invest a lot of money into this super middleweight division, and you know, there was a list of guys that Showtime put together that they would like to see these guys fight, and I was a part of that list. You know, and it all intertied with the Super Six guys and everything, and also a couple of guys that was outside the Super Six, but all tough fights. And you know, all with all the guys that was on the list, nobody wanted to take the challenge to go to Quebec and take on this guy because they believe the chance of winning is slim. But again, this is the things that I do. I take the necessary chances and risk and to give myself an opportunity to be in the race.
Now, this is one thing that I hate to talk about, but it's been mentioned a whole lot, you know, and to me personally, I hate when money is being kind of thrown out there with media or even with fans, but I'm hearing a whole lot that they really lowballed you and enticing you to take in this fight. And if that was the case, why? Are you hurting financially? I mean, it seems like you've been consistent in getting in with some of the top level fighters this last couple years.
Yeah, you know, I believe that they, in my opinion, of course, lowballed me because they didn't want me to take the fight. But you know, Showtime kind of stick with their guns that with all the guys that was left on the list, I was the guy that they wanted to fight the most. And you know, I was campaigning that I really wanted to fight, but you know, they're trying to push me out of the fight with just the way how they was going about paying me, and so therefore everything got changed around, and the promoters starting to talk, and now you know we got final numbers, and get to an opportunity for this fight to be done, and now we are excited about it. We're looking forward to going to Quebec City and upset this guy November 5th.
I'm going to pass it over to my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, who also is the lead and feature writer for Max Boxing. Gabriel?
How you doing, Glenn? Welcome to the show, man. It's always a pleasure to hear you come on the show. You're always so honest with us. I'm curious, just from a fight standpoint, can you break down what you see in Lucien Boutte? A lot of guys, myself included, don't think he's fighting top-level competition, and I think you are certainly a guy that can give him a challenge. What do you see when you look at him?
Well, I mean, Boutte is an excellent fighter. I don't want to take anything away from him. Certainly, I believe there are some challenges that's out there for him, and there are some question marks for sure. But he is a wonderful talent. He's a star over there in Canada and a virgin star in the rest of the world. So, you know, you know, obviously he gets a lot of attention and he gets paid. Simply because he can pack the house, and you have a lot of fans, a lot of people that come out and support this man. So, you know, in boxing, with the TV network and everybody involved, that means more than anything else. You put in two sheets in the seat. So when you look at his boxing skill, you see there are some good things there. He's a sharper. He comes, you know, just being a sharper and a good one, come with some difficulties. You know, you have to study the guy and see what he does well, how he moves, and what punches he's comfortable throwing, and at what point in time that you want to throw those punches, and then make the adjustment that you need to make and go and then capitalize. There is no fighter that steps in the ring that doesn't fight and make mistakes. So you want to put yourself in position to capitalize on those mistakes when they happen.
You know, looking at the Super Six, you know, you went 1-1, but there were, you know, the second one was a very close, very entertaining fight. Do you think that gave you some new life, you know, joining the Super Six, doing as well as you did? Do you think it was a good thing for your career?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, you know, you're looking at a man that's 42 years old, and I'm very proud of my age, able to come down from 175 pounds, have been in that weight class for some 10 years or more, and able to lose the weight and lose it the right way and come down 168 pounds in the super middleweight and take on a top guy.
that weight class and beat him, and then take on a two-time world champion a few months later, and put a fight that I am also disappointed in, because I believe I could have done better in that fight, and I would love the opportunity to redeem myself against Carl Pratt. But you know, look at the two fights that I have in super middleweight. I haven't fought in that weight class for a while, and fight against top guys. You know, it's just a matter of me coming in the super middleweight division and the super six tournament. You know, at eliminating time, where you know once you lose a fight, you're out. You know, most of the guys in the tournament didn't have to just lose a fight and out. They was able to win a couple of times and lose a couple of times and still have opportunities to continue. But just the time when I entered the tournament, it was eliminating time. So it just played into the hands where once I lost that fight against Carl Frosch, I was out. But I'm still in the mindset, believe that I can do serious and some good damage and wonderful work in this way that the fans of boxing can be happy and just be pleased about the things that I can still do.
You know, I definitely say that Lushan Bute taking you on is a huge step up. You know, Glenn, I mean, look at the resume. It speaks for itself. I mean, you faced everybody. You took out, you took on the best. You fought the best. Bute, in a lot of ways, them saying that he is the best 168, what is your thoughts about that? I mean, because I sit there and I go, well, we can really name some of the guys he's fought, and some of them really honestly did not live up for him to be placed as a pound-for-pound best yet.
Well, I mean, you know, unfortunately, boxing, best and all of those things are all based on how much tush you can put in the speed. That's just it. At the bottom line, you know, we can talk all we want to talk and fool ourselves all we want to, but at the end of the day, the cash cows are the best in the business, and not so much of anything else but the fact that they are the cash cows. For me, I believe the best guy in boxing right now is Pacquiao, even though he's a cash cow, but he proved it time and time against the best fighters that's available and want to fight him. So I give him my respect. Usain Bute is not in that kind of territory. It's hard for me to say anybody is the best super middleweight when I'm in that weight class, and I don't consider anybody better than me.
Right.
So I know that they get opportunities and they get, a lot of times they get the benefit of the doubt simply because of who they are and again, all the things that I said earlier. You know, when it comes to money, they get favors and they get the benefit of the doubt. People pay them more attention and intend to favors and all of those things. You know, it can be made an argument that people believe that Bute already lost a fight and had favors done for him with refereeing and all of that stuff. So again, you know.
So do you think?
Who is the best is just a matter of opinion.
So let me ask you this, you know, because you just mentioned something about the referee and Bute, and we talked a little bit about his resume. Do you think he's been pampered just a tad bit? What's your opinion?
It's not just him. It happens. It happens in boxing for the most part with all of the guys who make, the major paydays. Not the major paydays, but the guys who bring in the major tushes in the arenas. They're gonna be thrown guys that, you know, they can make easy paydays and just be the star that they are now, and they're not gonna give them challenges and things until they really have to. And I think right now, Showtime really stepped up and said, okay, you have your run with whatever you have done in the past, but now we want to put you in positions to take on some top guys to see if you are who everybody else is saying you are.
Gabriel?
You don't have any trepidation about going up to Canada? I mean, it's, you know, you're always in tough, grinded-out fights. The Frotch fight was like that, came down to the judges. Do you think you got to have to knock this guy out or at least knock him down a few times in order to get a win?
You know, I feel that way. It is the way of boxing. We all know how things work out in boxing for the most part. But, you know, it is the chance that you have to take when you want to accomplish the things that I want to accomplish. And I want to beat these guys. I want to fight against these guys. And I'm never going to have these fights in my hometown. I'm not going to have these fights where I want it and how I want it. So I have to take these risks if I want to fight these fighters. And you know, that is the way that I built my career. It is the chances that I take. It is the reason why my record is the way it is. But it can't stop me, because sitting at home will never give me the opportunities to defeat these guys or derail these guys or upset these guys or do anything and accomplish any of my goals that I wanted to. If I was sitting at home waiting for the perfect moment, nobody would know who Glenn Johnson is, because it wouldn't happen.
Wow. Go ahead, Gabe.
I'm just curious, you know, because this is stylistically, it's as exciting a fight as I can think of, really. To me, you know, I've been kind of detracting on Butte, pretty much calling him Svenotki, because he seems to kind of pick and choose guys at the right time or guys that are not on his level. Do you feel because you lost that Frotch fight, that's why they brought you up there? Or do you think it was because the network said, you know what, enough's enough, and we need to have a top-quality guy, and Glenn Johnson is that guy?
Well, I think so. And it might be a little bit of both. Who knows? But at the end of the day, I really felt like Showtime did what they were supposed to do. They invested a lot of money in the super middleweight division, and I believe they really want to create a star out of the investment. And right now, this guy is the front runner, because at the end of the day, out of everybody, there's three major players right now that's the front runner for that position. But out of all of those three guys, this is the guy that put the most push in the seats. So, you know, he is the front runner. He is the biggest star that's in the weight class. And as much as we would like the winner of the Super 6 to be that guy, the truth of the matter, they won't be, because none of those two guys put people in this fight. So he will be the star. He will be the guy that we all need to be, the guy that we all need to step up and kind of take over the weight class by just stepping all over him in the ring.
Now, how do you nullify a guy that has youth, speed, power, and throws some very accurate, hard body shots where he's stopped a numerous of opponents by far right now in his career, Glenn? How do you go up against something like that?
Well, for me, none of the guys that he fought and stopped, none of them are Glenn Johnson. None of those guys bring to the table what I do. So for that, that stands on its own. Again, if you know somebody through body shots and they work the body well, then when you step in the ring with them, you know that you need to be prepared for those punches. You need to know that you put yourself in position so those punches don't work as easy as they would against somebody who don't have the same mindset or the same skills or understands how boxing is and what position a guy needs to be in to show certain punches. And you take him out of those spots. And neutralizing speed. Speed can always be neutralized by timing, which is the thing that I do well. I was not faster than Roy Jones. Roy Jones was always faster than me, and probably faster than every man that he stepped in the ring with. But when you use the timing that you need to use, you can always neutralize the speed. And you know, not saying that I'm just going to just not respect his power and all of that, but I believe that I'm pretty strong defensively.
Now, a man that you did face and you fought, you know, Chad Dawson is getting his shot at Bernard Hopkins. Let me ask you this: wasn't Bernard Hopkins giving you a rematch? I mean, it obviously looks like that rematch between you two would be explosive. You know, two guys that come in, two guys that want to fight, two guys that have been hanging around for this amount of time. Glenn, why do you think that fight hasn't materialized at all?
Yeah, I don't know. Only Bernard knows. I know that I asked for that rematch many times. I mean, you guys in the media here, you know, I give shout out for that fight. I spoke to Bernard personally about he and I doing a rematch, and it just hasn't happened. You know, and so you know, again, for me, I can only control my end of it. You know, just so everybody in boxing knows and all the people who watch boxing fans and everyone knows that that is a fight that I want. I wish the fight happening someday, and it's a fight that I'm ready to take on whenever time that opportunity comes. And I hope it comes one day.
Do you think now that Bernard is so big and huge, do you think that maybe he's became with a lot of these fighters that we mentioned a little earlier, they've been having the opportunities of pick and choose who they like to fight. I mean, do you think that's a little bit of a case that he sees that you're still dangerous and you're not, your style just wouldn't mesh correctly in what he's trying to accomplish?
Well, I think you're correct. I mean, I don't think, you know, he went over there and in Canada and he fought a perfect fight against a perfect guy that fit into that mold. One, the guy is a guy that brings a lot to the table in the fact that he's not high risk and but he's high paid. So you know,
right.
that's a reason for that. He also fought a few fights. You know, a few fights like that. You know, when Joker, Zaghi, and those guys come from overseas. You know, a similar situation. They, you know, these guys don't bring the same kind of heat I bring to the table, and they certainly put more cash on the table. So, you know, it's all about opportunities. When you put two opportunity or three opportunity on the table, for the most part, any businessman they look and they see where they can make the most money and take the least of risk. And again, you know, I'm not a low risk guy. And I'm not a high cash guy as well. I'm not a natural American born guy. So it's been an uphill battle for me to be a star in this country. You know, and I'm not a guy that bring that fanfare from the country I'm coming from, which is Jamaica. They're not big fat mom boxing supporters. So you know, you have these guys from England and to places like Quebec, Canada, and you know, all of these places that have huge boxing fan and huge boxing supporters. So you know, they might not come with the same skill set, they might not as good or as sound, but they bring in so much more cash to the table. So when you give a guy an opportunity to pick a fighter from a list of say five guys. And, you know, at the end of the day, and you know, to be honest, I probably would do the same thing. You want to look how you make the most money and the least risk.
You think he's just waiting for you to get old? Maybe when you're 50, you know, Hopkins will... Of course, he's 87, so I don't know how much older he can get. So I don't know.
Well, exactly. I don't think you want to wait around for me to get old because I think he's leading the pack. So
who do you like in that fight? I'm curious. You know, you've known both of them in the ring and outside of the ring. What do you think? Do you think Chad Dawson's got a shot to upset Hopkins?
You know, are you looking at two boxers? You know, neither one of these guys are fighters or punches or anything like that. So you definitely just have to go with Dawson. I just don't see, you know, as much as I respect Bernard Hopkins, and he's a savvy guy and he knows boxing very well. He have a lot of, you know, savvy way of going about what he do. And I think he will neutralize a lot of Dawson's skills, but you know, Dawson is just faster, he's younger, he's gonna able to use all that he has. You know, they do the same thing basically. The only thing that that I believe Bernard Hopkins have over Dawson is just the boxing brain, just the knowledge of the sport and how
right.
to maneuver. But at the end of the day, I just believe that when you have two guys who do the same thing, you just go with the guy who just do it faster, quicker, and swifter, and just a little more athletic and all that. It just seems like that's the way it will play out. I think it will be a close fight. Again, it all depends on what Dawson show up to, because, you know, Dawson, it seems like there's two of them. There's a Dawson who will not fight if he's not in a fanfare where the people are cheering for him like he did in Canada. He just didn't show for that fight. When he fought me in Tampa, he didn't fight as hard as when he fought in Connecticut in his hometown where all the fanfare
yeah.
was for him and nobody. So, you know, it's two different Dawson, and you still have to see what Dawson. You know, have two prime American guys going to fight in America. I think location is the key. If it's a Dawson crowd, I think Dawson will fight better. And if it's a Bernard crowd, I believe Bernard probably will beat him. He will win that fight. Because it seems to me, when I look at it and analyze it, it seems to be that type with the Dawson that will show up.
Yes, Hopkins is really good at getting you to do the opposite of what you normally do. It seemed like he got Pascal out of his game plan, got him to be more aggressive and want to brawl a little more. But Dawson is a guy that seems to do his own thing, and he's very content to just box and get his points and not go outside of that envelope. I don't think Hopkins can really press more than what Chad's comfortable doing. I agree with you, though. I think he could neutralize a lot of things and maybe make him kind of stare at Hopkins, trying to figure out what to do. That might be his undoing. But I still haven't made a pick in that fight. I think it's an excellent matchup, but I like your breakdown.
Yeah, oh, thank you. I believe it. So I believe it as well. I mean, I believe it's going to be a good fight and a close fight. And you know, Pascal is really a four-round fighter. I mean, you know, you have never shown anything different.
Right.
I mean, you know,
yeah.
he's a front runner. He's
not very accurate either.
Fighter. He just fights for four rounds. So I don't think you really need a game plan that's a masterful game plan. You just need a game plan so you're going to go in there, you're going to make him work as hard as he's going to work for that four rounds, and then you're going to beat his ass for the rest of the round. That's it.
I agree. I'm curious, have you ever fought in an environment like you're about to? You know, the Butte, he brings it in terms of the draw. It's a big event. You know, they got girls on stripper poles out there in the crowd. It's going to be an unbelievable atmosphere. Have you ever fought in anything like that?
Well, you know, I fought in England, which, you know, they are similar fanfare people. You know, they love their boxing. I fought in Germany. You know, they're not as noisy as England is or even the Canadians, but they are so much one-sided and you know, just don't care about any other human being but their own. So it might not be the same exact atmosphere, but certainly I'm prepared for the one-sided treatment that goes along with going into these countries and compete against their own. So I am ready and I'm able, and for me it's just you know, something else that I got to do to get to the destination that I'm seeking.
Well, man, definitely we are over here on Leaving the Ring. We're always rooting for you, and hey, gotta thank you too, because after your fight with what was the name of the kid that you fought? Didn't even show up for your fight when you entered to the Super Six. Alan Green. I went on a bank here, and you said, you know what? At the end of it, in the interview, you said, you know, I come to fight and I make sure I leave it in the ring. You know how ecstatic we were here, Dawson, was out when you said that, man. We were just cheering and stuff because, absolutely, man, you are a throwback fighter that does surely likes to try to make sure you leave it in the ring. Mr. Glenn, as always, it's always a pleasure to have you here on Leaving the Ring. I want to thank you again for speaking to us and allowing us to interview you the day after the announcement of Lucian Butte. Wish you all the luck, and I'm rooting for you, man. Definitely.
Hey, thank you, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, all your kind words. And I also want to thank you guys to keep me in mind and continue to bring me back on your radio program and get the fans an opportunity to listen to me and for me to get my opinion and thoughts out there to the people. So I thank you guys for the platform that you set for me. So, you know, all the best to you and your program and everything, and my respect to your fans to keeping you on your program and keeping you going. So that's the kind of fanfare we need to keep boxing moving in the right direction.
Yes, definitely.
Absolutely.
Hey, and make sure, though, on the night of your fight, you don't have Russell Mora as the referee. Please.
Well, thank you. I thank you so much. You know, you're always looking out for me, which is a wonderful thing. I will do everything I can so that don't happen.
Absolutely, brother. You take care, man.
All right, buddy. Take it easy. Bye.
All right. Well, there you go, the World Warrior, Glenn Johnson. What happened?
They got their own version up there. They got Marlon B. Wright. He might be worse. Yeah, that's actually wrong. But they got if he knocks out Butte, you might actually see Marlon B. Wright get behind him and, you know, pretend that he's Butte and start working his arms and legs, you know, try to get him to stand up.
Which we saw happen when Lebrado Andrade went out there.
He was doing both voices, you know. Are you ready to continue? Yeah, I'm good. I'm ready to go. You know, it was unbelievable.
Well,
so,
we have Joseph Beckel, King Kong, that's scheduled to be on the show here at 7 o'clock. So I believe Gabriel's gonna either patch him in or
grabbing him now.
I apologize to anybody. You know what? About wanting to ask Glenn Johnson is that we're pressing for time. You know, and we needed to get the questions that we had it scheduled to ask already. So my apologies. We didn't get at least one or two fans to ask the questions. We'll have them on again very, very soon. And I promise you, this time we'll let the listeners have a chance to ask the Road Warrior, Glenn Johnson, some questions here on Leaving in the Ring. And while we wait, I believe Gabriel Montoya, you know, is going to be calling in King Kong, Joseph Arbeco. See how he sounds. Does he sound like the tape we played a little earlier here on Leaving the Ring? Or did he still have his normal voice? Does he still got his man voice? I'm hoping he does. I mean, those are a lot of shots that he took. You know, and I've been hitting nuts a few times in my lifetime. And I got to tell you, man, it's no fun in games, you know, getting hit there or anywhere. Punch in the face. It's no fun. But it does, you know, when you're in the business of boxing, it's expected. I always say you got to be a little crazy to be a fighter. If you want to call into the show, speak to us about the Guerrero-Madonna cancellation or Arbeco and Maris, not a problem. You can call here at 347-215-7598. If you're a first-time listener and you missed the two interviews that we've had with El Perro or Glenn Johnson, you can catch it on the replay. It always comes back on in the archives on the website of Leaving the Ring. And you can press play or you can put it on a default window so you can listen to the show. Really quick, we are still in negotiations with Fight Magazine. I mean, not negotiation. We're already there. We're just trying to finish up some other little nicks and nannies here. But Leaving the Ring is officially now with the Undisputed Fight Magazine and the staff and everybody. So we're going to bring in some new content and some new things to the magazine. It's a digital magazine. If you haven't had a chance, go check it out right now. You know, at UndisputedFightMagazine.com. You can go ahead and check that all out. But hey, Gabe, what's happening?
He's, I don't know, he's not answering. To see what's going on. Let me try him again.
Go for it.
He might be taking a nap next to Glenn Johnson. I'm not sure.
You know what's funny is that a lot of the times that we do call in fighters here on Leaving the Ring, I've noticed, man, I don't know if the listeners have noticed this, but when we call them in and we can't get a hold of them, it's always due to because they're taking a nap, you know? I don't know. I guess putting in all that hard work to entertain us boxing heads, you know, it's true, man. You put a lot of work in. You go home. You want to relax. You fall asleep.
Here we are.
Who knows? Here we go. Are you back?
I'm here with Joseph Akpeko, who just had his fight with Abner Morris. We all know the controversy. Now we get a chance to hear from the man himself. Welcome to the show, Joseph. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm fine.
Well, thank you for coming on. I'm going to pass it over to my co-host, David Duenas, and let him lead things off.
Come again?
Hi, hey, Joseph.
He's
going to pass it over here to me, Joseph. Joseph, first off, man, really sorry about that Saturday night. I think a lot of fight fans were frustrated, not as frustrated as you were, but just sickened on how Russell Mora handled the fight between you and Abner Morris on Saturday night. I mean, this was a very anticipated bout. It was a potentially would be a fight of the year. A lot of us were just really excited about this happening. But let me ask you, what is your thoughts? I mean, after all that fiasco, what happened after the fight, going back into the locker room and or the hotel, what was talked about? What was your thoughts and your feelings?
Yeah, after the fight, you know, I felt so sad, you know, because I wasn't happy with the way the referee handled the fight. You know, it was very, very bad. He wasn't fair in the ring. He just one-sided, and it made things very, very tough for me. So I was very, very, very disappointed.
Now you almost did a Zab Judah move, which was when Zab Judah was knocked out by Costa Zoo. He immediately went after Jay Nady, who was the referee, but he was way off on his argument or his accusations. You were not way off. I mean, I actually even tweeted that I would not be upset or disgusted if you were to put your glove on the neck of Russell Mora. Now, when you were doing that, thinking back now, would that have been the right thing to do?
Yeah. I was angry. I was very. It was out of anger. I wasn't gonna punch him. I wasn't gonna put my neck on his neck. I wasn't gonna do anything. But I was trying to go to him and ask him. I was just going to ask him, why did he treat me like that? Why did he have to do that to me? But I wasn't gonna use my hand or my gloves to touch him or anything. I was just gonna go in there to ask him a question out of thing.
He didn't seem to be too excited about answering questions. He wouldn't answer any with the media. He didn't want to talk to anybody, which I'm kind of upset about. You know, if you do something wrong, you'll answer my questions. I don't understand why I would have to be different.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
Yeah, I know.
At what point in the fight did you begin to think, is it me or am I fighting two people? Was it early on? Did it take a while? When was it?
Early on, when I threw a punch and then I missed, and then I fell down when he counted me. I didn't say anything because I know we have a long way to go. But after some few low blows, and I was complaining because before the fight, he came to the dressing room to give us the rules for the game, and then we complained to him that we saw Morris with Vic and it was a lot of low blows. So we pleaded with him to take care of that low blows. And he said he's good that we complain to him, so he's going to make sure he takes care of it in the ring. So after some few low blows and he wasn't doing anything good about it, you know, I was surprised. So after every round, my coach, my corner would talk to him that, this guy is punching low blows. You're not doing anything. They would say, oh, he's going to do something, and he wasn't doing anything. So I realized that, no, this referee is going to give me a whole lot of problem, you know. So it was a very big headache for me in the ring. And at the same time, the low blows was also weighing me down. It wasn't giving me enough strength. It was making me weak.
So you were feeling it, I mean, because he was hitting you not just below, like, on the cup, but he was hitting you on the hips. And a lot of them were belt line. I had a question, because on the tape, when they do the final instructions, he seemed to point to the top, you know, of your trunks and say, anything below this is low. Did I see that wrong? Or that was the line that he gave, right? And then everything else after that was kind of below that, or a lot of shots. Not everything, but a lot of shots were. To clarify for the fans, is it up to the ref to decide what is low, or is there a rule that says it's below the belly button?
as far as you know, what is the rule and how does that work?
He's breaking up. Gabe, you there?
Yeah. I couldn't hear a question. I couldn't understand the question.
I'm curious, like, you know, if you could just explain to the fans, like, you know, what is the rule about low blows? Is it up to the ref to decide? And those final instructions, like, okay, anything below this is low. And is it me or did Russell Mora point to the top of your trunks and say anything below this is low? How do you understand the rule?
Yeah, and you hit below the belt, it's a low punch, you know. This particular low punch, it was going directly to my crotch, you know. It was very, 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 very bad. So it was really, really hurt. You know, his own is not just on the belt or on the belt, but it's coming straight on my crotch, and he's that bad.
Everybody goes crazy about that 11th round with the knockdown, which was horrible. It was not a knockdown. But the 10th round, there was also a low blow there. Did you think, okay, finally he's going to take a point? Was that really the tipping point for you when he just seemed to ignore it, and he also didn't even give you a chance to get your 5 minutes of rest? He just kind of sent you back out there.
Yeah, I got a very heavy low blow, I think on the 9th or 10th round, and it was very heavy. You know, I really felt it, and he thought, and I complained to him as well, I didn't do anything, you know. And it was very heavy that if it were to be someone, the person wouldn't be able to continue the fight, you know, but I look at my fans, I look at people that have come there like the pit to watch me fight. I think about the people, TV, live, you know. I think about boxing in general, and that, no, boxing, this is what I choose to do. Let me kill myself, you know, because I was really, really suffering that I wouldn't be able to continue. But I said, let me kill myself because I have to fight for my peace, you know, so that keeps me going until the 11th round below, and that one was very horrible. So I was very, very horrible, and I couldn't stand. And then before I realized, Mora was, counting me, and I was so shocked.
Now, Alberto, let me ask you this, you know, because some fight fans, even during the fight and after the fight, they were already chanting out that, why didn't your trainer, your head coach, intervene earlier? Why didn't your head trainer say anything to Mora earlier during the fight? Why did he wait till the 11th round to finally show some emotions or disagreement in how he was handling the fight? Why was there such a delay on your trainer to step in?
They were complaining to the referee several times. Especially like anytime the bell ring anytime the bell ring for the 1 minute for us to sit, they always complain to him. They always complain to him whenever, and then we have to stop. They always complain to him. But it was getting too much. It was too bad. That was why everybody was angry.
Now what has the promoters or let's say the IBF, what have they said to you? I mean, what was one of the things they have came to you and said?
My promoter told me that the IBF has ordered for a rematch, which has already taken place, and they have to conclude everything by 15th of September, and then the fight has to happen before 14th.
The fight has to happen before when?
Before December.
14th of December. Before 14th of December.
Okay. Gabe?
I know Maras has already said he wants the rematch. Obviously, you're going to want to take it. You don't foresee any sort of fight getting in between? I mean, is this for you? This has to happen? There's no question.
I'm so happy this rematch is happening, you know, because a lot of things went wrong during the first fight, and I was so happy that this rematch is happening. So I have to prove a point. I have to prove to the fans that the referee really did stole my title, you know. So I'm so happy that the IBF has given me the chance to prove myself.
I'm curious what you think about the bottom line is the fight was very good. I know we're talking a lot about the low blows, but
right.
I'm curious what your thoughts are on the fight overall. Was there anything that Abner did that surprised you? What are your thoughts about the fight itself without the low blows?
Abner himself, I was so surprised because as a boxer, I've been fighting from your first fight to get to the world championship level. I don't know why he couldn't control himself by the low blow, because this is something that you're doing and you know it could go against you, you know, and you still keep doing it and you can't stop, you know. I was so surprised about that, because he should be able to, force himself to stop.
Yeah, I thought, you know, especially because it seemed like you were coming on very late. Early on, he was incredibly aggressive, which I was surprised about. He faded around like 8 or 9, and it seemed like you started to take over. Did you agree with that?
He started, you know, he started from first and second. You know, I think after fifth round, I think he wasn't able to fight like from the beginning. So I took over from there.
Were you surprised he came out so fast?
I wasn't surprised he came that fast. You know, I was expecting more from him.
Let me ask this: Would you accept an apology from Russell Mora? I mean, has he made an attempt to maybe fess up to his to his outrageous calls and his huge mistakes of your Saturday fight?
Yes, of course, when somebody do something bad and he apologizes, I will accept his apology, but, you know, he really ruined my life, my career, thanks to IBF for being fair to me, you know, because he was taking away my meal ticket from me. So, you know, he's very bad, you know.
Absolutely. Now, in the fight with Morris, okay, the one thing that I noticed that, you know, because you do this fantastic, when you walk yourself back to the ropes, you make a guy commit, and then you counter on him. But with Morris, did he surprise you how he didn't commit and trying to attack you or overwhelm you on the ropes? He was darting in and out. Did that confuse you?
It didn't confuse me, but he's gonna commit himself in a rematch.
Absolutely. You know, well, I got to tell you, Joseph, you know that we're rooting for you, and it was a travesty of what happened on Saturday night. It was terrible. I mean, a lot of fight fans were just completely disgusted. I hope you get the rematch, and I hope there's some justification in what of that outcome of that fight. I wish you all the luck in the world. And physically, have you went to the doctor, man? Have you found anything out? Are you okay, you know, below the belt? I mean, any news about any of that?
I've seen the doctor, and they gave me a few distinct medications, so I'm feeling better.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely good. I don't know, Gabe, if you have any more questions.
Good. I just appreciate you coming on, and I know it's probably been a tough week. You're having to deal with all this, so I really appreciate it. And when the fight gets made and everything, hopefully I'll get to be there. But we'll definitely have you on again, and we can talk about that in the future. But
thank you very much.
Thank you so much, and good luck to you, Joseph.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, there you go. Joseph Key Kong at Beko calls in. Tell us about his thoughts about what happened Saturday night between his showdown with Arnor Morris and his showdown with Russell Mora. You know, because in a lot of ways he was fighting him as well in the ring. You know, and just glad to hear that he's fine and Yeah, an open letter or open publicly an apology, I think is due. You know, it's not going to solve anything. He's still incompetent. I think he still shouldn't be close to any ring. But I think just to take notice, man, that you screwed up. Not just a little bit, but a whole lot.
Yeah,
don't let me catch you at the fish head.
Seriously. Yeah, this is kind of unbelievable, you know, but you know, this is a nice thing, and I think people, you know, rightfully so, they trash the sanctioning bodies constantly, but it is kind of nice to see a sanctioning body get it right, and they go, you know what, let me look at the tape, let's figure this out, you know what, something wrong happened here, let's fix it, and now we get the right, you know, the right outcome in that we're going to get the rematch. I wanted the rematch anyways. I was kind of looking at it going, you know, I don't think both these guys can beat Nonito Donaire. You know, I don't think Abner Morales is quite ready for him. You know, Abeko probably could give him some trouble, but I think the speed of Donaire and power is going to be too much for anybody at 118.
I agree.
So it makes more sense to me that these guys would rematch. It's such a good fight. It's a close fight. And Abner's had his belt for quite some time. He's had some defenses. I always think a guy like that should get a chance to get his belt back. If he doesn't get, like, blown out and, you know, if it is a close fight like this and hotly contested, let's see it again. Why not? You know, it could only be a good thing. And fans are really excited about this fight when it first was announced. So, you know, I think they'll be even more excited this time around. You know, it's a good thing. You know, we kind of got a two-for-one. It sucks for Agbeko that it has to be rematched because of this. But at the same time, I would have felt bad if, say, the low blows didn't happen, he loses a tough fight, and then they just say, well, we're going to move on to other opponents, and he gets stuck without a belt. A guy like him needs a belt. You know, he needs title fights in order to stay relevant. So I think it's a great thing that he's able to get a rematch and move forward.
You know, and the thing, too, is that, you know, Nonito Donaire, like I said before, you know, I think he beats, you know, to the other mentioned fighters we've been talking about, but it's not going to be an easy beat. You know, I mean, the speed and the power is definitely there for Nonito, but, you know, Morris and Abeko are going to be there to definitely take him the distance. They're not no Fernando Montero. And I think a lot of people are really falling into that bagwagon. I just talked to numerous fans the other night and the other night before that, night before that. And I'm just, look, man, don't put these guys in the same category, you know. And it definitely, I honestly, truly believe you're absolutely right about a rematch, you know. This is a rematch that is needed for the sport, and it should be headlined as the rematch, but this time without Russell Mora.
Yeah, you know? No more Mora, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, it would be, can you imagine if they brought him back in and, like, he did it again? You know, I think people would just flip out. We don't need to see him for a while. I don't think we will. You know, I think Keith Kaiser is smarter than that to put him right back in there, particularly in this fight. But, you know, like I said, it's going to be a while before you see this guy, and it's certainly going to be a while before you're going to want to see him again. You know, he's going to have to show consistency. He's going to have to show the ability to make a ruling and stick to it. He's going to have to show a lot of things.
You know,
so we'll see.
Really, really quick too, because you know we try to get in as many as questions as we can, and we do, you know, forget to ask one, because there was one question that we could have asked, and it would have been a great question, because you know, on our Facebook, Mohad Ahmed asked, okay, if the IBF didn't discount the fight, why does it still count as a loss? We could have asked him that. I don't think you would have an answer for it, but it is a good question.
I don't think so. Yeah.
You know? But, you know,
I don't think he would have. I mean, yeah, that's a good question. You know, it's the same thing. It's like, why did you warn a guy and then not take points? You know, I think it just comes down to they're doing the best they can. I mean, fans really want the whole thing. They want all the justice they can get. And, you know, just be happy you're getting the rematch. I think probably a part of that answer would be you can't, sort of like in New Jersey, which I actually thought was kind of a strange ruling, but if you can't prove that the guy was paid off and told to do this, you can't really take away his license and, like, suspend him and take away the win and call it a no contest. You can't prove that he was doing something wrong other than being a shitty ref.
Absolutely.
So I think that's probably a part of it. You know, all we know is that the guy did a really bad job. We need a do-over. Let's do a do-over. And the kid gets to hold on to the belt because he won the belt. It was a tough, close fight. You know, like I said, you know, the fighters fight, the refs ref, or, you know, in Morris' case, they don't. And that's really all you can do, you know. Why should Morris have a no contest on there because the ref did a shitty job? That's kind of not fair, and I know people won't agree with that, but I think that's just the long and the short of it, you know. But that's me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, fight fans, if you want to call in right now and speak to us here on Leaving the Ring, you want to talk about Joseph Adebeko or Morris, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. Let's patch in some fight fans really quick here, Gabe. And I believe we have Al Bernstein that's going to be calling in as well after he's done watching the movie Glee with his son. Let's get Leon. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
What's up, guys? Man, I'm still just a little pissed off about that fight on Saturday, man. I mean,
you're not alone, brother. You're not alone.
Man, they should just call in Beko and say, you know what, just give us your belt because you're going to lose this fight anyway. There's no way you can win. Could have saved him the trip. It just doesn't make any sense. And, you know, I was actually watching the Brandon Rios-Peterson fight, and Russell Moore, he refed that fight as well. So he's familiar with low blows. I just don't know what the hell happened in this fight. I guess he was looking at one of the ring car girls or something because it's like he didn't see anything. And my problem with the whole situation is that everybody's getting on Jim Gray for the way he, you know, came at the ref after the fight, but he kind of gave him a pass. He showed him the replay to try to let him, you know, be honest about it, say, okay, well, I missed the call or whatnot. And then Moore was still like, oh, well, that's still a legal blow. I mean, you're looking at the tape. Why don't you just be honest about it? I mean, you know, that's the reason why he's getting all the flack. Just be honest about it, admit you made a mistake, and move on. You know, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, that's one of the main reasons why we're having the problem we're having today. This is a black eye in boxing. These guys put their heart and soul on the line, you know, and they get shafted. And Adebeko was he had the belt. I mean, and he basically lost the belt before he even stepped in the ring. It just doesn't make any sense. It's crazy to me.
Yeah, it's hard for me to disagree. I mean, I was actually looking, Ron Bourne just wrote an article really attacking Keith Kaiser, actually, the Nevada State Athletic Commission director, calling him a clerk. Because, you know, he allowed a guy, he basically said that Russell Moore is a good referee, he did a subpar job on Saturday, but I'm sorry, but, you know, I wouldn't call anybody as a really good referee after that performance. And really looking at his history, of being inconsistent. He's not very good. That's why he's in this situation. I've seen Kenny Bayless. Actually, I've never seen Kenny Bayless really have an off night or be terribly over-officious. Steve Smoger, I've seen him let it go a little longer than maybe it should, but he always adheres to the rules. You know, those things are kind of judgment calls that are made in the heat of the moment. But not letting a fighter, you know, not penalizing a fighter for not following the rules, that's just bad refereeing. It's not a judgment call. It's not. It's plain day. You're looking at a low blow, and there you go. You know, you call it a knockdown. You don't call it a low blow. How is that having an off day? That's just having, you know, an off career. That's what it feels like. Looking at the last few fights of his, you know, Jim Gray, that whole thing. I found it very funny because it is similar to the Morris thing, which I think is very funny. You know, they're on the bandwagon, they jump off the bandwagon, now everybody loves Joseph Adebeko. Jim Gray, everybody hates him for the Pete Rose review, for being too tough on his subjects or asking the tough questions, being kind of rude about it at times anyways. And all of a sudden he does one good interview and everybody's like, this guy is the greatest interviewer of all time. You know, thank God for Jim Gray. It just shows how, like, you know, hot and cold people really are. You know, I thought it was just hilarious.
Well, I tell you what.
I
applauded him. Right. I applauded him for doing that interview. But, you know, like I said, I'm not a big fan of Jim Gray. But, you know, when he stepped to the plate, I you got to pat him on the back for doing that. Because those are questions I would have asked that guy as well. And you were looking to do the same thing, ask him particular questions. But you're absolutely right. You know, he's not the greatest interviewer of all times and stuff. But he definitely did something that a lot of us wanted. wanted, a lot of us wanted Russell Moore to be called out for what he was doing. And I applaud, you know, Jim Gray for stepping up to the plate to do that. He did exactly what he's been known to be, a dick.
And this is the thing, that too, that's interesting, is that, you know, it was like more than a week before. Borges reports 8 days. I was told at ringside it was, I wasn't given a determinant time, but Don King said they did not want Russell Moore as the referee. They felt he was a golden boy referee, that he would be biased towards their guy, and they didn't want him. You know, I didn't get this confirmed, but I'd heard some that the Espinosas were not happy about Mora either, but probably because of his history. Why did Keith Kaiser allow this fight to go forward with this referee? I don't know. You know, his apparently what I was told by the King camp was that he didn't see any evidence to suggest that he was Golden Boy biased or that he was a tainted ref in any way, and so they let him go forward. Well, I guess you now have that, you know.
Do you feel like Russell Moore wouldn't be getting as much flack if he would have owned up to it when Jim Gray showed him the tape and said, "Oh, I made a mistake. I'm sorry," you know, like a true ref, but like Kenny Bayless did in the Manny Pacquiao fight when, you know, the little knockdown came out and really wasn't a knockdown, and he apologized to Pacquiao. Don't you think he wouldn't have got as much flack if he would have owned up to it at that point?
Well, there's a difference. I mean, Kenny made a missed call that I think anybody could have missed. You know, that was a tough heat of the moment kind of thing. You know, we all have the benefit of HD and TV sitting there watching, going, "Oh my God, that wasn't a knockdown," and replays. But he's got a split second. He was consistently good through the whole fight. It was just that one moment. Moro was crappy the whole time. So I almost found it worse if he would have sat there and said, "Oh, you know what? I kind of screwed up. Hope, sorry." You know, it's like, well, I mean, you know, an apology is definitely warranted, but it's like, well, that doesn't really do us any good either way. You screwed up. You know, and you screwed up the whole fight. The whole fight, not a part of it, you know. You just screwed up one part of it, like, even worse, you know, than the rest.
What about Morris? Because I hear that there's a lot of news saying that Morris is getting a lot of flack because I guess he saw that he watched the tape as well, and he was saying that the punch that the low blow that dropped Morris was legal. And, I mean, if you look at that tape, I mean, I looked at it 2 or 3 times. It's obvious the punch is low.
it was low.
Yeah, I mean, like, why don't you think that he deserves a little bit of that as well because he's not even owning up to it? And I'm saying, well, I did kind of hit him low. I'm sorry about that, and we'll get him on the next go-around.
Well, I think, too, he talked about the fact that, you know, I'm a body puncher, and it's going to happen. You know, any number of things can happen. The guy can pull straight out, and I'll catch him low. The guy could move. Body punches are not easy. You know, they're kind of the diciest part of the game. And, you know, in terms of keeping it legal and everything, you know, punches to the head, usually you're going to not really wrap around to the back and become a rabid punch randomly, although that does happen. I don't really have a hell of a lot of problems with what Morris is saying. I mean, in a sense,
I don't either.
What should a fighter say, you know? I'm told that we're possibly going to have him on next week. For scheduling reasons, he couldn't come on this week. But I'll certainly ask him about it. But I don't think he's being arrogant about it. Or if you ever really meet Abner, I've met him a number of times.
Yeah.
Somebody said, you know, oh, his squeaky clean image is gone. That was all just marketing bullshit. It really isn't. I mean, it's really who he is. He's a very nice guy. He's always open to questions. Very straightforward. I don't see anything shady about him. He's definitely an animal in the ring. He definitely is a warrior and brings it, but I don't see him as a dirty fighter. I don't see him as a dirty guy. I know for a fact that he just is not happy about how everything went. I don't think anybody would want to win their title this way.
Exactly.
You know, so I don't take.
What about because I know Darchinian put out a tape about how many low blows he got hit by Morris and Gabe. I know you said that you spoke with Morris and you've seen him train live. Have there been any other fighters that have complained about him? Because that's a lot of low blows in one fight, Gabe. I mean, I understand that. I mean, you're taught to throw body shots, and I box as well, so I understand that it's all about angles. But I mean, damn, that's a lot of body shots. A lot of low blows for one fight.
Yeah, it
is.
It is. You know, it is. I mean, some guys have an issue with it. I haven't heard any other. Have you, Dave?
No, I haven't. You know what? I mean, the whole Big Darchinian was way back even before, you know what I mean? Right after his fight immediately, he did complain about that. But other fighters, I haven't heard a whole lot about it. And you know what? None of them came out of the woodworks. I mean, Yanni Perez is part of the camp, but, you know, he never really complained about low blows and stuff. And, You know, go ahead.
Darchinian complaining is kind of becoming par for the course when he loses. I mean, he got
right.
knocked out and then immediately said, "I didn't get knocked out. What are you talking about?"
I think
about?
That's why no one really paid attention to it. You know what I mean? They say, "Don't cry wolf," and because when you finally cry, nobody's going to hear you. And that's what really happened. You know what I mean? Nobody really paid attention to it. And the reason why people are paying attention to Arbeco is because, for one, it was really, really. It was really in front of you. And two, Arbeco has never been one of those kind of guys that's just going to cry about every little thing and stuff, you know. I'm not saying that Darchinian cries about every little thing because I don't want his manager coming at me, you know. But, you know.
people don't get a reputation for no reason. And it seems to me that Vic has complained after his losses, you know. It's just flat out or... always seems to have a little bit of an excuse about it, or a lot of one. You're exactly right, Dave. That's why people didn't listen, you know. And there was—I didn't really have a big problem with low blows in that fight. I mean, maybe there were belt line, but you know, there are some people that say the belt line's legal. You know, it's up to the discretion of the ref. It depends on where the guy is wearing his trunks.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, it is what it is, as my least favorite saying in the world, but. Now we have a rematch, and I think at this point, you know, sifting over the whole thing, it's done. You know, I think what really needs to happen, though, is Kaiser and Mora need to, you know, not apologize, Kaiser doesn't, but they need to acknowledge what happened. They need to take swift action, and we need maybe some transparency and see what that action is and see the development of Mora and acknowledge this and move forward to the rematch.
Exactly.
We need Steve Smoker or Kenny Bayless for the next fight, and everything will go good.
Yeah. You know, the only thing I'm afraid of, guys, is that now that this is out in the open of what happened with the Morris and Arbeco, that the referee is not too tentative of calling particular shots. You know what I mean? Don't jump the gun. You know, because we're going to be right back where we started. You know, which is being robbed away from a good fight. And that's my whole thing is that get a rematch, but make sure it's going to be just neutral and fair, you know, and allow these two gentlemen to go at it and allow us fight fans, man, to have a great fight, you know. And Linus put something out there very, very good. He said on Twitter, he said, hey, the ref did his job in the Vic fight, the Vic Darchinian fight, but not here. That's also a huge difference of what happened on Saturday night between Arbeco and Morris. And you're absolutely right, you know.
Cal's ready for us.
Is he ready? Okay, so, Leon, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother. I appreciate you calling in. It's always great, man. Thank you very much.
Not a problem. Have a good one, guys.
You too. So let's get Al Bernstein on to talk to us a little bit about what he was seeing. He's talking about being ringside. This man was ringside on that Saturday night.
Yeah, he had a better seat than I did. So let me hop in here. I'll be right back, and I'll grab Al and we'll talk.
We'll talk Glee. Are we going to talk Glee?
We'll talk Glee. I want to know more about Glee than we've talked about this fight long enough.
I know. I think I'm all I'm all Arbeco out. Let's get to Glee. Just kidding. You know that we don't talk about. Anything else about, except for boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Fight fans, you want to call in and speak to us here on Leaving the Ring? You certainly can. 347-215-7598. And our boxing hotline, man, has been doing fantastic. It's been doing great. A lot of boxing heads calling in, you know, voicing their opinion. Go ahead, Gabe.
And here we are with one of the great voices of boxing, the voice of Showtime, and a man that was absolutely incensed this last Saturday, Mr. Al Bernstein.
How are you?
Show, Al?
It's great. Good to be with you guys. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. I'm here with Dave Duenas, who's my co-host, and, of course, I'm Gabriel Montoya. My first question, what was more painful, watching Glee
or watching that fight last Saturday?
I that, you know what, that's an interesting question. Actually, I like Lee. It was great today. I joked in the tweets I made that every parent of a child between 10 and 17 was going to see Glee. And I have a 12-year-old son who is in theater. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was quite good, actually. I know I've just lost a third of the base of fans that I had. Maybe two-thirds now that I think about it. But it was fun.
Al, as we're speaking, I am unfollowing you from Twitter right now.
Exactly. You not only unfollowed me, you tried to retweet the unfollow. That's possible.
You're blocked. That's it.
Yeah, I'm blocked forever from everybody. The fight Saturday was a little painful, too. More painful for Joseph Agbeko. Strangely enough, of course, the fight was very good, right? I mean, it really was. It was an interesting fight. I wouldn't say it was, you know, both men had their lapses, but their will to win was amazing, and it was like a fight in two parts. You know, the first part belonged to Mahrez, and much of the second part belonged to Agbeko.
That was the thing that I was thinking early on watching it, was I just want to see a rematch, and this is before the controversy. I thought this is a hotly contested fight. I don't know if either guy is going to beat Donaire, and I'm not sure if Donaire wants a part of them yet. He may want to move up to 122 first before he gets them. I just thought, you know, there was adjustments made. There was ebb and flow. It was as tight and as good a fight as I think everybody expected.
Absolutely. You know, we had, at the start of the tournament, we had what we believed were four light bantamweights that were very evenly matched. As it turns out, Yanni Perez wasn't quite up to the task. You know, he lost to Agbeko, and it was a fairly convincing loss, and then was beaten pretty badly by Victor Chinian. So whatever's happened to Yanni Perez, it just isn't good at this point. But the other three, you know, you could throw their names in a hat in any combination, you know, Darchinian and Agbeko and Mahrez, and you'd probably come up with a winning match. And you hit it right on the head. None of them, in my opinion, beat Nonito Donaire. I can't imagine, unless Nonito Donaire beat himself, like by not training or overlooking them or something. So I agree with you. The idea of a rematch is palatable in any case, all the controversy notwithstanding.
Now, you know, at any fight event, being part of media, we do this a lot. After the fight, we either go sit down and have dinner or we sit around and chat. You know, have a cigar, sit down and chat about what the outcome or what our thoughts were. Now, with this fight here, what was the conversation between the executives of Showtime, the promoters, and yourself, if you did get in pulled into the conversation?
Well, I didn't really talk to that group of people, partially because I was still doing the stuff for the Boxing Channel, so I didn't really get a chance to talk to too many of the Showtime people. The next day, I did talk. Brunch with David Denkins Jr. and Ray Schmaltz, who produced the show, and you know, I think for the most part, you know, we kind of felt bad that the controversy, you know, overshadowed the fight, and that's the way I felt. Certainly, I hate when I walk away from a show like that. I never feel good, and because I just feel like when you're forced to deal with that kind of controversy and criticize somebody like we had to criticize Russell Moura takes away from the fighters. Now, I will say, and I've watched the show now twice since then, I am proud of the fact that we never got away from the fight, that we didn't let the Russell Moura distraction make us not talk about what the fighters were doing in the ring.
Right.
As we should. We shouldn't really get a gold star for that because that's our jobs, but how shall I delicately put this? Many boxing announcers don't do that. So at least we did what we were supposed to do, and that part made me feel good. But, you know, in general, so I think, and I think part of it is, it probably days later, this is probably almost a terrible thing to say, but you guys know that, you know, we all cover boxing, and if there's a great fight, we treat it that way, and we're going to talk about it. The mainstream media, this fight could have been the greatest fight on the planet, and it was a very good fight,
right,
and nothing would get written about it. But because there was a controversy and because there was all this drama, the mainstream media wrote about this more than they would have otherwise. And so what it ended up doing was, in a way, calling more attention to the idea that they may fade again. So at the end of the day, it may have been good for the commerce of those guys fighting again.
How damaging is that, though, to have a mainstream media talk about this, where it more or less a mainstream casual fan that really doesn't watch every little fight that's happening around the world in boxing reads a particular, because I had a chance to read a mainstream article, and they really made it, the way they phrased and word everything, they really made it seem like Morris, it came in as a known dirty fighter. Does this hurt him more into repairing his image with the mainstream?
Well, I think not that much would have been made about the fact that he had the point taken away against Darchinian, and Darchinian's crew certainly thought he threw a lot of low punches. But when you compound it with this match, and they don't know. That's the problem. When you drop in to cover something and you're not really aware of the history of people, you're going to end up generalizing and making mistakes. And that, unfortunately, is, what a lot of the folks that write for a living, when they drop in. One guy wrote a column where he said, "I haven't paid attention to boxing for a decade. And I came back, and boy, it looks just like the same to me. There was a controversy." Well, he missed a decade. So maybe something happened in that 10 years. It was a little better than this, So, it'd be like me. I'm not a giant hockey fan. And I think hockey, by the way, is a perfect analogy to boxing. Because casual, observers, even in the media, make generalizations about hockey. And some of them may be partially true, but they're not all true. And so they say things about the sport that aren't true. And I think that happens to boxing as well. And, this is a topic on which I could spend 3 hours. You end up sounding a little bit like, somebody from Fox News yelling about the mainstream media, and then somebody would say, hey, aren't you part of that? And yeah, I am. But, I just think it's, it's a shame because, I'm not some flag waver for boxing. I cover it and I love the sport. But, I just think facts are facts, and, the quality of the actual product that boxing is putting out there right now is actually very good.
That's really good. I mean, Showtime is doing a fantastic job, and how they're putting the right time slots for boxing and the right fights for boxing for the network. My question, though, for you is this, is because immediately when that first round started, I took notice that Morris, when he threw a body shot, and didn't land below the belt, it landed on the hip. What point did you realize, okay, we're going to start seeing some really low blows in this fight?
Well, I thought he landed, and I did make the comment in round one, and it was still fresh in my mind that he had had, I just talked about the bad start he got off to against Darchinian with the low blow, the point being deducted, the cut that he got from a clash of heads, and then the flash knockdown. So he was performing very well in round one, and that was different than what happened to Darchinian. But the one thing that was the same was that he had already landed several low blows. Now, at that point, of course, I didn't realized Russell Moore was going to ignore all that. Silly me. I thought maybe he might pay attention. And so I did comment that, he's got to be careful about that. And so I thought, when we were three rounds into that fight, to my way of thinking, he had already landed enough low blows that things were getting pretty dicey.
Right.
You said this is the worst ref you've seen or worst reffing job in 15 years.
Well, one of the worst.
One of the worst.
Yeah, but still that's pretty hot there. And the reason, probably the reason I said that, and I stand by the statement, is that it was consistently bad. The first knockdown, I didn't think was a knockdown. It's very hard to make a case for it. And since then, by the way, Russell Moore has admitted, he's told a number of people that he didn't think he got that one right. He's admitted that he, the low blows he let go were truly low. And the other element of his performance, and I pointed this out, at one point I said, Joseph Agbeko is getting warned for everything other, blamed for everything other than Watergate. And
I remember
that. It's true. I mean, and that's what makes us wonder about a referee and really get distressed. When you get the feeling that there's a fighter in that ring who is facing two men. I hate saying that again, but everything Russell Moore did, the warnings to Agbeko, constant about pushing down, about using the head, about everything, this and that, constantly, and the other guy's whacking him low on, you know, a million occasions. So to me, that was it was the totality of the performance that made me say it was one of the worst in 15 years.
That was the thing we were saying earlier. The only thing he was consistent in was his inconsistency. You know, I don't know if you saw this. I kind of looked down live while it was happening, and I missed it. But when he designated where a low blow would be judged, with Iveco, it seemed on the tape that he judged it at the top of the trunks. You know, as far as I know, it's the belly button is like the line of demarcation.
Right, and Iveco added to the problem by having his trunks a little low. So here's the other point. Here's where it really gets dicey for Russell Moore. Afterwards, in the interview he did with Jim Gray, he said those punches were on the belt line and weren't low. Well, if they weren't low, how come on five occasions he warned Mahrez about low punches if they weren't low?
Right.
You can't have it both ways.
He even did it on the knockdown. He warned Mahrez, and then he turned around and started
and
shooting.
And he'd warned him. He'd given him time to recover, I think, a round or two earlier. So really, at that juncture, there has been so many low. And the other thing is, he was in perfect position to see the low blow. He was not blocked. He was not, you know. And that's the part that was distressing. And it's annoying because it took away from a. And I'll tell you, had he taken a point away from Abner Mahrez, maybe in around 6 or 7 or 8. It's highly conceivable Mahrez would have known, I got to be really careful. I'm not going to throw anywhere to make it go low. Could have changed the complexion of the fight, and it certainly probably would have prevented that 11th round knockdown.
Yeah, without question. That was the thing to me, is especially if he had continued to go low, loses another point. And we have a very close fight. And in that 12th round, I thought Mahrez fought it like he was up a few rounds, because he was. And,
right.
You know, I thought he was fading too. You know,
I think he got tired. I agree with you. You know, he finished strongly in his last fight against Tarchinian, and Iveco has finished strongly in his last few fights. And we wondered who would have it at the end. And ironically, you wouldn't think Iveco, after losing a lot of the first rounds and getting hit low so many times, you wouldn't think he would have had it in him to perform so well in the last part of the fight.
I'm curious, what are your thoughts on the IBF's ruling and the way Keith Kaiser has handled his discipline, or kind of not really disciplining Russell Moore? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, here's the thing. I like Keith a lot, and I think he's, you know, generally done a good job with the commission. But I think part of the problem is, and it happens, I think, when criticism is this steep, there is this tendency to circle the wagons a bit.
Right.
And I understand it to a point. I think, you know, but in a way he's done a de facto suspension of Moore by saying flat out, we're not going to give him any big fights for a while. But, you know, I guess he doesn't want to actually do a suspension or put him on the bench officially. And, you know, I don't know. There have been many people say that's inappropriate, because if you're going to penalize him for these mistakes. And the other thing is, this is the part that worries me a little bit. They're acting like this happened in a vacuum. Well, you know, and maybe it was like one mistake in the fight. It wasn't one mistake, although it's true that knockdown was pretty obvious, a low blow, and that just changing that would have made the fight a draw. But it was a bunch of errors. And also, Russell Moore, in my mind, still has kind of a stain on his record from letting Fernando Montiel take all that punishment against Juanito Donaire. And he also took points away from Michael Casitas.
Right.
In the fight that he had with, Madonna, right? Or with,
Guerrero.
No,
Guerrero.
Guerrero.
Guerrero, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So, you know, there have been a number of instances where, if you look back at Russell Moore's record, he's had some curious... I'm not insinuating anything. I'm just saying that however you want to look at it, his record is not impeccable.
No,
right.
It's not.
I'm going to say something now that's probably really controversial, which I don't do that often, as you guys well know. So what the heck? What's the difference? I already lost my base with the Glee thing, so I might as well get the rest mad at me. You know, I'll be asking you guys for a job sweeping up around the office next week. I don't think there are that many good referees in boxing, to be perfectly frank. I've thought it for years, and I still think it. It's a very difficult job. But I believe that referees get themselves in big trouble by kind of making up technique and making up the way they're going to handle fights and also getting way too involved as a personality and all that stuff. And honestly, I don't think I could name you but six referees in the United States that I would actually say, wow, I really want them reffing this fight.
Yeah, I would say there's like Tony Weeks.
Yeah, excellent.
Smoger and Bayless.
Excellent. Superb. Those are my top two right there. Funny you said that. Those guys they are right there at the top of the list. And Kenny Bayless is excellent. He's had fewer, but he's a very good referee. But there's not that many. It's too bad because they have a very difficult and job. But you're gonna make a mistake here and there. Perfect example is Kenny Bayless made a mistake in the Pacquiao Mosley fight, on a knockdown. But that's way different. That's a perfect example of how you can look at that much differently than you look at what Russell Moura did. It was one isolated incident in an otherwise well-refereed match in which he didn't seem to be, impacting the outcome.
Right. Everybody has
we all make mistakes, right? We all make mistakes. We all do things wrong. None of us are perfect. I make mistakes on broadcasts. I'm sure you've written things that you say, ooh, darn it, I wasn't right or it wasn't what I should have written.
Right.
I remember when Hagler turned righty, you said this was going to be a significant moment in this fight. And, it was only when he turned left that he did it. I always actually wanted to mention that to you. Maybe I did mention to you one of the times we sat next to each other. When he turned right, he didn't have a big impact. But I think when he turned back left, Hearns got kind of confused. And that's when Hagler really started to put him on it. He was kind of
that could be.
In his head, But we all make our, we have our moments.
Yeah, his life is going to be that way. And we have to be more than forgiving. But the thing that was troublesome about this performance was that it was so consistently not very good.
Right.
Yeah.
Let me
ask you. It hurt Abner Mares too in another way because Abner Mares, for a part of this fight anyway, not the whole fight, but for a part of it, took his game to, I thought, another level because he was, against Darchinian, he was more of a brawler, and also against Perez, I thought. And I felt that for him to become a top fighter, he's going to have to get back to being a better technician and more of a boxer puncher. And for a good part of this fight, he did that.
He did do that.
Yeah.
He was darting in and out, and he was mixing up his punches. And
yes,
he wasn't
yes.
being suckered in by Adebeko the way he
absolutely.
Was. Absolutely.
You're 100% right.
Yeah, where Abedico, you would sucker in Perez by making him commit the right hand. He, Mars didn't fall for that. But let me ask you this here. In a rematch, do we see a different fight or do we see a much closer fight? Because with the points deducted, it would have been a completely different fight. And with the points deducted, Mars would have been more cautious throwing to the body. With a rematch, what do we see here? Do we see Mars being able to adjust even more or Abedico, who seemed to have a little bit of an off night in the first and two to three rounds?
Yeah, well, Abedico was, Obeko's 31 years old, and he had to do his training camp twice. Now, 31's not that old, but for a bantamweight, it's not young. Duke Darchinian's amazing in his mid-30s, because normally bantamweights don't fight that well at that age. But so I really was willing to chalk it up to that a little bit, but what was amazing was that Abedico was able to actually come back and fight better. I would expect a sharper Joseph Agbeko. And here's the thing about Mares. He was right. He told us in the fighter meetings, you have to get off first against Agbeko. If you don't get off first and you let him think, he will be much tougher. And, of course, in those first four or five rounds, he did. Now, after round four, when that big right hand landed, though he still controlled the fifth and the sixth, at some point, Abner Mares either got tired or was wary of the power of Agbeko. Now, the question is, was the second half of that fight more the way it would normally go, or was the first half? And that's the answer we'll get when we see them in the ring again.
Absolutely. Well, Al, I appreciate you taking the time to speak to us. We're almost at the end of our show here. I want to thank you again for taking the time. And, it's always a pleasure having you on Leaving the Ring.
it's good to be with you. And if you don't mind, I want to mention that if fans want to see our coverage of Mara Zigbeko, they can go to boxingchannel.tv and see that, as well as a bunch of other great stuff.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying that. Yeah.
Well, thank you. We're having fun with it. And, you know, I'm the executive producer of it, and, of course, I host on it as well. And we got a great group of guys that work on it. And I'm very pleased with it. It's kind of fun to be able to cover the sport and do, you know, on the Internet, of course, you can be more creative and do different things. And that's one of the things that makes it kind of fun.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, good to talk to you guys.
All right, Al. We'll talk
all right.
soon.
And if you guys come back into Vegas in the next couple weeks, we're all going to go see Glee.
Awesome. There you go.
All right. I knew that would lure you to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
You know, no shows, no topless clubs, nothing. We're talking
nothing,
great.
So, right.
And no gambling. No gambling either. All right.
So
you
deal.
There.
Take care.
All right, Al. Take
care. Oh, man. That is great.
I'm all over
well,
it.
Yeah. Well, we didn't have time to do our fight schedule. We apologize. But, hey, listen. Great, great show. I had a lot of fun with the callers, listeners, the guests, and always with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and our producer, Mr. David Chan, who always makes sure that things will run smoothly here on Leaving the Ring. Everybody, be careful. Be careful out there. Be careful out there. I'm sorry, I'm looking at some. Don't drink and drive, and enjoy your weekend, Gabe.
Yep, I can't wait. If you're in Mexico and you're at the fight, don't be afraid to say hi and make sure you buy me a beer. And next week we'll talk about the return of Kermit Cintron and all the good stuff that happened last week. All right, Dave, I'll catch up with you. I'll hit you up in Mexico.
All right, brother. Take care.